before. It's like a memo has gone round from what passes for Kemi Badenoch's brain, and everybody is supposed to be attacking him today for a six-month distant mooted rise in petrol prices. I appreciate that most of them forgot how to use their brains in 2016, but this is surely one of the finest examples yet of how the Tory establishment ecosystem has gone potty.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, oil prices have risen again despite the release of millions of barrels of emergency reserves in response to the war in the Middle East. It was hoped markets would stabilise, but Iran has continued to attack ships in the Gulf overnight. The Strait of Hormuz, a key waterway for energy shipments, remains effectively closed. International journalist Isamam Rashid is in the United Arab Emirates and has spoken to LBC.
Just looking over the entrance of the Strait of Hormuz, and in the very hazy distance, I can see dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of cargo, tankers, vessels, all currently anchored down. And they have been for around 8 or 9 days now because the Strait of Hormuz is completely blocked by the Iranian military.
LBC has discovered that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer. The terror group has known the event as a priority target to commit attacks. Security services haven't responded to a request for comment, but it's understood the situation is being monitored. You can read more on our exclusive story on the LBC app. A cabinet minister has defended the severance payment made to Lord Mandelson after he was sacked as US ambassador. Files show that the Treasury agreed to a settlement of £75,000 following his dismissal last September. It's also emerged Keir Starmer was warned about the peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein before appointing him. Speaking to LBC this morning, the paymaster general, Nick Thomas Simmons, moved to justify the payout.
Employment tribunals are what are called cost neutral. In other words, you can win an employment tribunal, but you still will not, in ordinary circumstances, usually recover your legal costs. You can see why, on a numbers basis, you have someone who is claiming £547,000, the documents show us, threatening to go to a tribunal, have a dispute, is negotiated down to £75,000. You can see why, from a numbers point, taking legal advice, that decision was made.
Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing in relation to Jeffrey Epstein. The fairness of the student loan system is going to be examined by MPs. The Treasury Committee will look at increasing concerns about repayments and interest rates. And workers at John Lewis and Waitrose are going to get an annual bonus for the first time in 4 years. The retailer has reported stronger profitability. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 42 at 10,310. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
We all love a good meal, but there's no feeling quite like cooking one. Whether it's everyone at yours for a Sunday roast or after-school sausage and mash. Quick, simple, gone in minutes. One thing brings it all together. Ah, Bisto. The original gravy. Rich, smooth, and unmistakable since 1908. When the gravy makes the dish, make the gravy. Ah, Bisto.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Something rather extraordinary has happened. It's as if the planets have aligned in an almost magical way. If you are kind enough to listen to this programme on a vaguely regular basis, you'll be aware of my somewhat fraught relationship with what other programmes describe as features, or regular features, recurring features. So what normally happens is I come up with an idea that we all agree is great fun, what larks, eh, Pip, we say to each other. And then we try and get some production made for it. And that takes months, and my enthusiasm for the feature wanes slightly. And then the production turns up, so my enthusiasm comes back. And then, because I have a slightly patchy brain, I forget about the feature for a few weeks. And for reasons that I've never fully grasped, so do my top team of crack operatives. And then we remember. And then if we're very, very lucky, occasionally the feature then settles back into the furniture of the program and does become a regular recurring feature, like on a proper program presented by a grown-up. That's the fraught relationship that we have. If you were listening yesterday, you may be aware that we have probably stumbled into a new feature. But that's not the extraordinary thing that has happened, because on today's program, we are going to go feature-tastic. Not only do I have a reverse ferret special, that's a feature that is only 2 days old. And technically, it's not even 24 hours old yet, because we didn't do it at the top of yesterday's show. It features the sound effects of ferrets, for example. And we have a magnificent example of reverse ferrets undertaken by the great and the good of the British media, courtesy of the release yesterday of the Peter Mandelson papers and the collective amnesia that has gripped the entire British media and political establishment about what they all said when Peter Mandelson was originally appointed. So we've got to don't let me forget any of this, by the way. I figured if I tell you at the top of the show, you'll be more likely to remind me. It's a reverse ferret special. We've then got, and this is where things begin to get really exciting, we've then got my all-time favourite missing word round. So this is a headline from which I will remove a word and invite you to guess what that word is. And this is quite a big clue. It is my all-time favourite missing word round. It is impossible for me to convey how much joy this headline brought me because of the word in it that I am going to remove. That's probably too big a clue. Let's not do that again. So we've got a reverse ferret special. We've got my favourite ever missing word round. And then we've got a marriage. If I was Cilla Black, the late Cilla Black, I'd be making jokes now about buying a hat. We've got a marriage of two different features. We have got unhinged headline, marrying this morning in one of your newspapers, missed information. It's a thing of genuine magnificence. I'll give you a little bit of a clue on that one. Do you remember when people were wanging on about snowflakes all the time? So if you were lucky enough, and I think a lot of it is luck, to possess empathy, if you cared about your fellow human, if you cared about decency, kindness, human rights, any of those things, if you cared about any of those things, if you were, for example, opposed to bigotry, to racism, to homophobia or transphobia, to anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, if you cared about any of those things, you were a snowflake. Do you remember that? Everyone would be called a snowflake because they cared about humans too much. That was the mark of a snowflake. Look at that snowflake over there, they would say, or write, or tweet. What a snowflake they must be, because they care about, sometimes they even care about humans that they've never met and never will meet. Down with them. And these people now are getting very upset about banknotes. They also get upset about flags and statues, all of which, as you may have noticed if you're paying attention, are inanimate objects with no feelings. So if you care more about inanimate objects with no feelings than you do about human beings who bleed the same blood that you bleed, then you are a very tough and robust individual. If you care more about humans than you do about inanimate objects, you are a pathetic snowflake and a beta male, I think, or female indeed. And that's where this extraordinary marriage of an unhinged headline to a missed information will take us a little bit later in the program. All that's missing, as many of you have already pointed out and as I had managed to overlook, is a woke watch. We don't currently have a woke watch. If anyone can bring us a half-decent woke watch by close of play today, then this will be a show for the ages. This will be a show in which pretty much every sound effect that Keith has at his gnarled and stubby fingertips will be deployed in the course of a single program. Because we've got the reverse ferret special. We've got the missing word round. We've got, it doesn't actually have any production, does it, the missing word round? Should we do a bleep or something? No, all right, sorry. You're busy, are you? Okay. We've got the unhinged headline, marrying missed information. And if you pull your weight and stop expecting me to do all the heavy lifting every flipping day on this program, we've got, hopefully got a woke watch as well. That could be extraordinary, couldn't it? It could be magical. I don't know what the equivalent would be. Do you see that New Zealand bowler who got 5 wickets in succession recently in a first-class game? It'd be a bit like that, except not. Where do we begin today? 8 minutes after 10 is the time. We begin with this, frankly, unbelievable. I don't use that word very often. I normally say extraordinary. We have an unbelievable aligning of the planets. I am, as you know, completely obsessed with the psychology, the mental gymnastics, and unfortunately, as has become increasingly clear, the weapons-grade ignorance of all of the people in the business of sharing opinions for money, whether they're politicians or pundits, who have been catastrophically wrong about everything now for the best part of a decade. All of the people who have been catastrophically wrong about everything for almost a decade have this month been catastrophically wrong about Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's war in Iran. This became crystal clear in the House of Commons yesterday during PMQs. Question that I'm going to finally get to at the end of this interminable monologue about, it will be about whether or not this represents a serious change of fortunes for Keir Starmer. Whether getting this so completely and absolutely correct will actually see some sort of bounce in his popularity or some change in attitudes towards him. Because I honestly don't know, and I can't wait to ask you. But what has become crystal clear is that all of the people who have been catastrophically wrong about everything, shall I do the list? I'll do the list. Brexit, austerity, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Donald Trump, catastrophically wrong about all of these things, are utterly untouched by embarrassment, humiliation, or shame, because they queued up, jostling with the sharpest of elbows to push each other out of the way and compete to see who could shout the loudest, calling for Keir Starmer to join the war in Iran. "I've never been more ashamed to be British," they shouted. "He's weak and pathetic and the special relationship is over," they mewled. He's a national disgrace. "It's the worst thing since Suez," wrote the world's wrongest man, Daniel Hannan. And now they've all gone a little bit quiet. They haven't quite reached the scale of denial that Kemi Badenoch reached in the House of Commons yesterday when she effectively spent all six of her questions channeling John Cleese. I don't know if you heard PMQs yesterday, but she spent all six of her questions channeling John Cleese and insisting that we
don't mention the war.
Unfortunately, Keir Starmer wanted to talk about little else. But it's not just Kemi Badenoch. It's as if a memo has gone around to the dumbest people in the country insisting that they all start banging on about fuel duty, having its cap removed in, yes, wait for it, September. It's currently March. Shall we count? April, May, June, July, August, September. So yesterday, you were literally attacking Keir Starmer for not joining a probably illegal war in the Middle East, which everybody now agrees is a bloody disaster. Talking of reverse ferrets, Andrew Neil probably holds the record for moving quickest from saying this is an absolutely brilliant idea and Keir Starmer should be foursquare behind it to saying this is an unmitigated disaster and God knows how it's going to end. But he's not alone. You think of a politician or a pundit who leans towards the right. In fact, think of anybody you know who supported Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity and Donald Trump. And you will find someone who was attacking Keir Starmer mere hours ago for refusing to get involved in this disgusting war. And now they're trying to make the national conversation about a six-month distant, long-scheduled, still uncertain removal of a cap on fuel duty that has been in place since 2022. I'll say that again, because sometimes, as you know, I have to pinch myself. They are trying to make the national conversation. I'm looking at front pages now. I'm listening to some commentators, all of whom spectacularly wrong about all of the usual list, and to which we have now added the war in Iran. More later on the results of the investigation into the girls' school that got blown to smithereens. Whatever you do, don't mention that if you were shouting at Keir Starmer for not getting involved last week or explaining why you'd never been more ashamed to be British. I just want to get this absolutely clear. It is a long-scheduled, still uncertain, six-month distant increase in fuel prices that people are complaining about and trying to blame Keir Starmer for hours, literally hours, after attacking him for not getting involved in an illegal war in the Middle East. Now, yesterday I asked this question rhetorically. I said, do they not know, or does she not know, in Kemi Badenoch's case, where petrol actually comes from? The idea that now is the time to start attacking a government that inherited a fuel duty cap that they're minded or scheduled. I don't know that they will even remove it, but that's a conversation for a different day. And of course, if they don't, part of the reason will be the war in the Middle East and the impact that it's had on oil prices. But I asked rhetorically yesterday whether these people even knew where petrol came from. What do you need? Brass neck doesn't cover it. What is it that you need to conclude that this is a good day? Hours, literally. You've just put the phone down from telling all your friends in the media to attack Keir Starmer for not joining Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump's war. You've literally just put the phone down, looked at the television screen, realise you've made the mother of all mistakes, and decide, I know what we'll do. We'll go in on fuel duty. We'll try to blame Keir Starmer for a six-month distant rise in the price of petrol while oil tankers are being attacked and confined to barracks in the Middle East as a direct consequence of the war that yesterday, we were not only telling him to get involved in, but attacking him quite nastily in a very ad hominem fashion for not being in already. Do these people know where petrol comes from? And then, of course, you reminded me that we're talking about a gristle-headed section of our population and our commentariat that contains people who think that concrete grows out of the ground. You are talking about people whose stupidity is visible from space. You are talking about people who possibly think that petrol grows on trees or comes out of a soda stream. I don't know. But I do know that the effort I put in on an almost daily basis to pointing out to you the contempt in which these people hold you. Imagine if I turned up for work today, having been in favour of this war all last week and thought, let's not mention the war. Let's certainly not mention the, let's definitely not go near the girls' school that's been blown up by the Americans and all the dead schoolgirls. What can we talk about? He said, how can we try to make Keir Starmer look bad today? And someone said, why don't you talk about fuel duty? Kemi Badenoch did in the House of Commons yesterday. You'd probably fire that person. He said, don't be ridiculous. My listeners deserve more than that. My readers deserve more than that. My viewers aren't that stupid. I'm not going to get them riled up about a 6 month distant increase in fuel prices while they're setting fire to refineries in the Middle East in a war that I was telling Keir Starmer he was a national disgrace for not joining just yesterday, or forgive me, possibly the day before. And it gives you a mark of how desperate they are. And it gives you a wonderful indication of how pathetic they are. Not fit to lead the country is one of the headlines that the right-wing media has gone with today. When they're not attacking him over the Mandelson appointment that they all praised to the rafters, and I mean all, they are trying to attack him for a mooted increase in petrol prices. And it just makes me wonder. It just makes me wonder whether or not this will actually be a significant moment for Keir Starmer. Sometimes, given the bent nature of much of our media, you can't tell how the Labour Party or the Labour government is doing, except by looking at the hysterical reaction of their enemies. Not really in Parliament, they're increasingly irrelevant. And of course, print media is increasingly irrelevant as well, but together they still dominate political and public discourse. You can't really tell how well or how badly they're doing without looking at events through the lens of their opponent's hysterical reaction. Or, in this case, the reaction isn't really hysterical. It's humiliatingly stupid. Why aren't you talking about the war anymore? We're talking about the possibility of petrol prices going up in 6 months' time. So just run that by me again. You're talking about what? Yeah, we're going to use all six questions in PMQs to talk about the possibility of petrol prices going up next September. Sorry, is the war over? Is the war that you were screaming from the rooftops Keir Starmer had to join on pain of national humiliation, has it somehow ended? You've moved on, have you, now to the possible increase in petrol prices next September? Oh, I see. What are the other five questions going to be about, Kemi? No. I'm Kemi Badenoch. I don't do gaffes. I'm going to ask all six questions about a mooted increase in petrol prices 6 months hence without mentioning the war. And they're going along with it. The Brexit fans, the Boris Johnson toe ticklers, the austerity vampires, the Liz Truss fan club, they're all going along with it. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need to tell me. And I haven't spent enough time setting this question up, actually. So it would be helpful if you just got involved without another lengthy monologue. But this is what the phone-in is going to be about. Do you think... So the Falklands War, I don't know if you know this. It will depend slightly on your age and how much attention you were paying at the time. So I did it at A-level. And when General Galtieri sent his troops to the Falkland Islands, the SDP were smashing it in the polls. Hard to believe, given that they faded into relative oblivion a few years later, but the SDP had been set up by exiles from traditional political parties, mostly the Liberals, and the massive majority came from the Labour Party, David Owen, Shirley Williams, Roy Jenkins. I mean, huge political beasts. It's hard to stress what a significant moment that was in British politics. And Margaret Thatcher's popularity was low. And then the Falklands War happened, and her decision to go to war changed everything. I don't think Starmer's decision not to go to war is going to be on a comparable historical scale, but it's a very helpful reminder, the Falklands lesson, of how significant these moments can be in terms of domestic political popularity. And I want you to tell me whether Keir Starmer's decision not to go to war is going to be a game changer in the context of his political and electoral fortunes. That's the question I've got for you. How big a deal do you think Keir Starmer's decision, in the face of so much shrill and hysterical abuse, to stand firm and refuse all requests to join this ridiculous war, to insist that our role will be only to defend our own interests and to retaliate against attacks upon our allies, how significant a moment do you think, because the polls haven't dropped yet, the ones that would be able to take this into account, which means we can have a really interesting conversation without having it undermined by the evidence, how significant a moment do you think this will prove to be? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need to simply tell me whether you think that Keir Starmer's decision, in the face of almost universal opposition from the four donkeys of the Crapopalypse support group, Keir Starmer's decision not to go to war is a significant moment in British political history, but more pertinently in his political fortunes. Hit the numbers now, you will get through, okay? And I mean that, you really will. 0345 6060 973. Tell me what you think, and crucially, tell me why you think it.
LBC.
Whether you're planning for your dream kitchen or that once-in-a-lifetime holiday, JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you make the most of your tax-free allowances this tax year. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing to learn more. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk. Tax rules vary by individual status and may change.
Left it late for Mother's Day. Don't worry, Moonpig's got ya. Because there's Mother's Day cards, and then there's Moonpig Mother's Day cards.
Aww.
You can add stickers, her favourite photos, even a message in your very own handwriting. Get it there with next day delivery. So there's no faff, no panic, and you'll still be the favourite. Plus, get 20% off when you use code MUM20. Because this Mother's Day, everyone deserves a
Moonpig.com.
When I realised there was demand for our business in overseas markets.
When I wanted to sharpen my business skills with training that wouldn't break the bank.
When it was time to turn my passion into a thriving business venture.
When I needed advice I could trust.
Whether you want to grow your business or even start one from scratch, we'll help you access the support you need when you need it. With free tools, insights and live or on-demand training, the UK government is backing your business. Visit business.gov.uk to find out how.
Play. James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
23 minutes after 10, Carl puts it well. James, what are they supposed to say? Starmer is doing really well. He has handled the war and Donald Trump. He's handled the war brilliantly and played Donald Trump like a fiddle. The fact that they all fell for it shows the vacuous nature of their politics. Let Starmer be Starmer, to paraphrase the West Wing. I just want to stress one thing. I have not been very positive about or impressed by Keir Starmer in recent months. I just think it's important to get that out there, because we're very quick to accuse other people of footballification. It doesn't generally apply to left-leaning people in the same way that it applies to right-winging people. There are, of course, exceptions, but if you think about the leader before Keir Starmer of the Labour Party and the number of lifetime Labour supporters who were supremely unimpressed and in many cases even disgusted by Jeremy Corbyn, then you will understand that it doesn't matter if you wear a red scarf. You haven't got it tied so tightly around your neck that you'd end up cheering for the Labour equivalent of a Liz Truss or a Boris Johnson. You maintain a degree of discretion and intelligence. You don't just sign up like a football fan to the colour of the shirt being worn by a politician and scream your support for them regardless of what they do. So I've been careful to catalogue my criticisms of Keir Starmer and to keep an eye on them. And I stand by, I think, almost all of them still. But he has behaved this month, he has behaved since the beginning of last week. March 2026 has given us a feeling we can't remember. It's made us very proud to have the Prime Minister that we have. And I just wonder how significant a moment you think this will be in the political fortunes of a Prime Minister whose popularity has reached spectacularly and historically low levels. Is it the single most important decision that a Prime Minister can take? Will we join a war? Will we go to war? Is it? It's probably up there. Imagine for a moment Kemi Badenoch or Nigel Farage being in the chair at Downing Street. They couldn't even sustain the courage of their own convictions for a week before they started claiming the polar opposite of what everybody else heard them say a week previously. Keir Starmer has faced down hideous, hideous abuse and criticism. He has endured hideous and abuse and criticism from Donald Trump, from the President of the United States of America, comparing him unfavorably to Winston Churchill. Some footage available, if you are so minded, of Donald Trump dancing yesterday in a profoundly Churchillian way. Because who here doesn't think Winston Churchill would have danced like a constipated gibbon whenever television cameras appeared at his rallies? And Starmer has stayed resolute. And I, for one, am deeply impressed. But what I don't know is what difference it would make. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need to tell me what difference, if any. Remember, you are more than welcome to tell me you don't think it's going to change anything in the bigger picture or the longer term. What difference you think getting this so right will make? Sam's in Colchester. Sam, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello,
how are
Sam.
You?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Good. I actually believe that this is going to be a big pivotal moment for Keir. Last time I spoke to you, I said that I was unsure of which way I was leaning in terms of my vote.
You were a member of the Tory party. You weren't just a voter, I think.
Correct.
You were a member of the Tory party.
Yeah. That's right. And everything that Keir's done with regards to Iran so far, I've been very impressed. I've been very proud of the way he's dealt with it. I think there's been a little bit of lackluster in some of the things.
Of course.
Where we didn't get perhaps our Navy off to Cyprus quite as quick. But in terms of the way he's dealt with, certainly with Trump and with his opponents around him, I think has been really, really, really good. And the fact we're not being sort of bowing to America's whims and just going off to war, for me, is spot on. You know, I my brain boils when I just see the likes of Badenoch and Farage and others just going, right, we're off, let's go, tally-ho, and off we go to another war in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And what sane person wouldn't take 24 hours just to say, right, let's just think about this, we've got to go in with a measured attitude, we're potentially taking the country to war, and the decisions that Keir Starmer has made so far, just for this moment, for me, has swung my vote closer to him than it has before.
That's interesting. Do you think it will stick? I mean, not necessarily because you're not putting an X in the box yet, but this is because there are, I think, of two pieces on the board, two types of pieces on the board, the big pieces and the little pieces, if you like, the royal family, the pieces, and then the pawns. But the big pieces, for the purposes of this very poor analogy, Sam, but bear with me, the big pieces stay. They affect significant and probably permanent change. And then they can get nibbled away at by the little pieces. And then another big piece could be put on the board from the other side, and it could undo some of the good that's been done by it. But this is a significant shift, in your opinion, that will probably have deeper roots than other shifts in opinion that we all feel periodically.
Yeah, I think for me, like you say, I think this is one that is, we will look back on when it comes to 3 years' time, or maybe even three months' time, when, you know, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone next week with this war at the moment. It seems to be just changing so quickly. But I think in time, a lot of people will look back and think, actually, you know what? He handled that really, really well. So far, I think he's done everything more or less correct. And there's only been a few minor details which haven't been right. Like I say, getting our Navy out there perhaps a bit quicker would have been a good thing. But, you know, I don't know how much quicker that could have moved, given that it's been completely ripped apart by previous governments over the years anyway.
Yes, we're back to it's amazing how many roads lead to George Osborne, but nothing ever touches it. He's like McCafferty, isn't he, in Cats?
Well, indeed, yes.
You sound like someone who has the national interest above their political partisanship, even though you were a fully paid up member of the Tory party. It sounds as if you are someone who has managed throughout this madness of the last 10 years and all of the effort put into persuading us to abandon these sort of positions. You can still put the national interest ahead of partisanship or personal prejudice, personal opinions. He has just played a blinder, full stop. Next question.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think I am. I like to think there's a lot of people like me out there as well,
so
to
do
be
I.
honest.
So do I, Sam.
but what I do think is it shines a light on where our politics is now and where you're saying, you know, you've got these individuals in our politics who are just shouting the loudest, and they are the ones who are asking six stupid questions to a prime minister.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and you need people in there who I don't think you can be in opposition anymore and actually agree with what the government are doing. And that, I think, is wrong. You know, I think you've got to be able to sometimes turn around and go...
If it doesn't happen at a time like this, then it's never going to happen at all, is it? And you're absolutely right. I mean, I would have thought that somebody like James Cleverly would have been able to be a lot more graceful and gracious in a moment like this than Kemi Badenoch has managed to be. And I'd have put Tom Tugendhat on that list at the moment, but he's popping up in one of the features that's coming up later on the programme. So I don't know if the gloss has come off Tugendhat as well. But thank you. That's a lovely start to the calls, because it speaks to precisely the point I was trying to make about this somehow transcending party politics, transcending political loyalties, transcending past allegiances, and speaking directly to the national interest. So the headbangers at the moment are trying to pretend that putting a badger on a banknote is damaging to our national interest, whereas attacking a prime minister for keeping us out of an illegal war that is going disastrously is almost a national sport for these people. You heard Sam refer there to PMQs yesterday with Kemi Badenoch. If you did miss it, then we have put together a little digest of exactly what she said and how she said it.
Don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right.
Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
There's continued volatility in the oil markets because of the war in the Middle East. It was hoped the release of emergency reserves yesterday would force stability, but Iran has continued to target ships in the Gulf overnight. LBC has discovered that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer. The terror group has named the event as a priority target. And a minister has argued the payout to Peter Mandelson after he was sacked as ambassador to Washington was value for money. Documents reveal he received £75,000 from the government. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain and bright spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out. And she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
Okay, here's a game. 25 minutes to 11 is the time. When Peter Mandelson hosted a drinks party on the night of the White House correspondents' dinner in April of last year, so almost exactly 12 months ago, who do you think co-hosted it? Okay, so Peter Mandelson, installed as ambassador to the United States of America, held a reception, a drinks reception, ahead of the annual White House correspondents' dinner. It was co-hosted not by an individual but by a British organisation whose insignia, if you like, was all over the room. The room was full of their insignia, their emblems, their merch almost. They're kind of, who do you think co-hosted Peter Mandelson's drinks reception immediately prior to the White House correspondents' dinner? And you're not going to believe me. And not only are you not going to believe me, you are going to think, you know, sometimes I think James has lost the plot when he goes on about the ecosystem created by the right-wing media and the right-wing politicians in this country. But if he's telling the truth about this, then I think I owe him an apology. When I tell you who not only co-hosted Peter Mandelson's drink reception ahead of the White House correspondents' dinner just 13 short months ago, when I tell you who it was, you are not going to believe me. It was not Bernard Manning, James, although that's an excellent guess. I want you to text me, because I genuinely don't think you're going to get it right, because it's not obvious until it is. It's not obvious until it is. And it is part of the conversation because, of course, today the revelations contained within the so-called Peter Mandelson files are another thing that the right-wing media and the Tory party and Nigel Farage and his friends are using to avoid mentioning the war that they were desperate to join just 10 minutes ago, but are now adamant would have been a disastrous decision, because they have no integrity, no honesty and no intelligence. And for once, Keir Starmer is displaying, well, not for once, that's not fair, but he is displaying all three of those things, integrity, intelligence and honesty, on a scale that many of us had forgotten what it looks like. I think probably a quick visit to Idiot's Corner, and then we'll go to Peterborough. Steph is there. So we have Martin in Wolverhampton. This is, and quite helpful in many ways, this is what happens if you spend your life boiling your brains on Twitter, okay? This is where you end up. Martin's been in touch. You far left, useful idiot. Starmer is a weak, useless, calculated waster, and in time all the cover-ups and scandals and lies of what's being hidden will come out, and the truth will be told, and Starmer didn't get involved in the war as he didn't want to lose the Muslim vote. That's from Martin in Wolverhampton, displaying, I mean, almost admirable ignorance of both Islamic history and the makeup of the Islamic faith in the modern world. The reason that we were supposed to join the war was because of the human rights abuses being visited upon the people in Iran, Martin, who are mostly Muslims. I don't know what to say to people like you. I feel enormous sympathy and a weird sense of concern for you. I hope that, for example, you're not allowed near scissors at the moment. Because to be that... What's the word I want? Stupid isn't fair. To be that boiled, to have had your brain boiled so completely... I'm going to have a look at your history. Sorry. Is that fair? Should we have a look at the other sort of things that he sends into the studio? Because I find this fascinating. These are the people that are being appealed to today by attempts to pretend that a six-month distant possible increase in fuel is a scandal, and that the people who were calling for more war in the Middle East yesterday are trying to get people like Martin to get cross about a six-month distant increase in fuel duty. I'll have a look at the history of that text shortly, because I think it's really interesting. 10:39 is the time. Steph is in Peterborough. Back to the question of whether or not this will prove to be a very significant moment in Keir Starmer's political fortunes. What do we think, Steph?
Well, after that that message, I don't know where to start. I think potentially it doesn't matter if Keir Starmer cured cancer, they'd still go at him. And I think the problem is that it's the opposition. It's not just the Reform Party or the Tories. It's also a lot involved with Labour, who's still connected to Jeremy. And the thing is, it's just like they sort of seem to be running out of things to have a go at him about. Because yes, he's made mistakes, haven't we all? But the thing is, though, with the U-turns and the, you know, listening to what other people are saying, they have adjusted and changed things, James. But the thing is, people are running out of things to criticise him over?
Well, yes, I do think that, oddly. Because, I mean, there has been quite a lot to criticise him for, and I sense we'd probably disagree about the significance... The significance of some of the policy resets, except that we'd agree on the fact that if you've made a mistake, it's much better to undo it than it is to persist in the mistake. Whether or not that qualifies as a U-turn or a reverse ferret is very much in the eye of the beholder. But I think 6 months ago, I'd have pushed back about that claim on cancer, because it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? He could cure cancer and he'd still get a kicking. But they can't bring themselves to say...
No.
This is amazing. We've actually seen some statesmanship after years of putting Liz Truss and Boris Johnson in Downing Street. We've actually seen some international statesmanship and some sovereignty, Steph. We've seen him putting the UK separate from, like Harold Wilson during Vietnam. We will not dance to the tune of a bloodthirsty American president.
But if you look at Iraq, though, James, everybody voted in the Commons for that. But until it went seriously badly wrong, then it was, oh my God, it's Blair's fault, you know, and yet they passed it through Parliament, you know. I mean, it wasn't just the UK that was involved in Iraq. There was a lot of Commonwealth and allies involved, but nobody says a thing about them. And I think because Iran's going so horribly wrong, especially with the killing of a kid.
And especially for the Iranian people. I mean, that is the point that we're all in danger sometimes of overlooking.
Yeah. Could you imagine, though, if Keir had gone in and backed the Americans? I mean, there's 136 countries in the world and only 134 joined in, but nobody seems to have mentioned them. But could you imagine if he had gone in and may have been part of that horrific bombing of those kids' school and innocent Iranians, it would have been horrendous.
The thing that intrigued me, and I mean, this is the way my brain works, it's not necessarily healthy, is what they would have done if it had been Barack Obama banging this drum, albeit that he would have been less likely to go in without a UN, without UN approval. That the idea of and of course Benjamin Netanyahu alongside Barack Obama waging an illegal war in Iran. If it had been Barack Obama, Nigel Farage, for example, would not have been able to support it because Barack Obama is black, and Nigel Farage can never be seen to be saying anything remotely warm, positive, or supportive about Barack Obama. As we know, he was adamant that American presidents had absolutely no business getting involved in British politics when the president was black. But when he was bright orange, he couldn't wait to roll out the red carpet and invite him to comment on everything under the sun. And of course to fly there several thousand miles at a cost of God knows how much in the hope of catching him for a moment this weekend in Mar-a-Lago. And Trump stayed resolutely about an hour away. And to be fair, you would, wouldn't you? If you knew that Nigel Farage was an hour away, you'd stay an hour away. 10:43 is the time. But will it be significant? The story that Steph is referring to, if you're not up to speed with it, a US Tomahawk cruise missile hit an Iranian school and killed 175 people because the military used outdated targeting information, according to a report. I'm going to read you that again. US Central Command, based in Florida, created the target coordinates for the missile using outdated data provided by the Defense Intelligence Agency. The New York Times has reported this. That first paragraph, once again. A US Tomahawk cruise missile hit an Iranian school and killed 175 people because the military used outdated targeting information, according to a report. Remember, Keir Starmer was weak for not getting involved in this. Richard Littlejohn at the Daily Mail explained he had never been more ashamed to be British, just as we were discovering, presumably because we weren't involved in the illegal murder of 175 Iranian schoolgirls. There's a little bit of Muslim killing going on over there, and Keir Starmer has refused to join in. I'm absolutely disgusted. I'm so ashamed to be British that we're not joining in with the Muslim killing. I don't know what passes for logic in these people's minds, but I do know that they'll just pretend it never happened. It's not just going to be Kemi Badenoch who channels John Cleese. They're all going to pretend it never happened. They never supported it. Badenoch already is. Farage already is. He's gone from saying we should do whatever Donald Trump wants us to do to saying we shouldn't get involved in a foreign war, which makes me wonder whether it will stick as a positive for Keir Starmer, because we inhabit an insane world now. For 10 years in this country, we have been told that black is white, up is down, they need us more than we need them, and I don't know anymore whether truth cuts through. The truth is, as Steph has just explained, Keir Starmer has been statesmanlike and superb. But we live in a country where it doesn't matter. We live in a country where Martin lives, in Wolverhampton, claiming, not just to me, he's been texting Ian as well, to say the reason Starmer didn't join the war on Iran is because he didn't want to upset the Muslims and lose votes. Here's another one from his canon. Keir Starmer never speaks up for the British people and safety and security of the nationals of this country. I don't know how many Martins there are out there. I don't get many in my inbox anymore, but if you've got gristle where your brain should be, you will not be persuaded that Keir Starmer has played a blinder. The key question then is how many Sams in Colchester are there out there? How many people still possess enough intellectual honesty to recognise that regardless of their previous opinion regarding a politician, here is a politician being brilliant? How big a deal is it going to be for Keir Starmer to have got this so spectacularly right in the face of so much hideous abuse from the President of the United States down? The various lords and ladies, haw-haw, and traitors and quislings in our media who sided with the president when he attacked our prime minister and now see that our prime minister was on the right side of history. How significant will this moment be? It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Peter Mandelson was sacked because he was found to have lied during the appointment process. And yet, remarkably, the government saw fit to offer a £75,000 payout. I'm not sure that's going to wash. Why on earth would you need to pay them to sling their hook when they have clearly committed a sackable offence?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nobody knows Vegas like BetMGM. And we know just how loud it can get. So sometimes it's important to turn it down or take a break. Because a little pause keeps the fun in play. To find out more about BetMGM's safer gambling tools and how we can support you to keep your play safe, visit the safer gambling area of our app or website. BetMGM, 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:50 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you weren't listening yesterday, then you might not know what this is. In fact, if you were listening yesterday, you might not know what that is. That's the sound that a ferret makes. Our political editor, Natasha Clark, told me what the verb is that is one of those beautifully specific verbs relevant to wildlife. Is it deking? Duking? Dinking? There's a special verb for the noise. Well, for this noise here. And I mention that because we launched reverse ferret specials yesterday, and we've got the mother of all reverse ferrets today. It was, and I can't believe this, and I also apologise to you for missing it at the time. When Peter Mandelson was appointed ambassador to the United States of America, he hosted a drinks reception ahead of the White House correspondents' dinner. The room in which it was held was emblazoned with the branding of his co-hosts, the people that will effectively have picked up the bill for the entire shindig. And his co-hosts were the Daily Mail. So the tiny bits of the media this morning that aren't taken up with attempts to make you care more about the six-month distant mooted increase in petrol prices than you do about the war that they were telling you to join yesterday are full of attempts to claim that the Peter Mandelson revelations are either particularly new or particularly damning. So let's have a look at what the Daily Mail had to say in December of 2024 when Peter Mandelson was appointed. Peter Mandelson may seem a curious appointment to be our new ambassador to the US, but he is undoubtedly a smooth talker and, like Mr. Trump, a natural wheeler dealer. And compared to the overgrown student politicians running this hapless government, he is a veritable colossus. What's that sound again? Is that, well, there it is. Because 4 months later, in April, when they co-hosted the party, they reported Peter Mandelson giving a speech in which he said, "This is a pinch-yourself moment for me, hosting tonight's reception in partnership with the Daily Mail." It's incredible. And then in February of this year, Mandelson's close association with Epstein was well known before he was made US ambassador, so why on earth was he given the job? I love this. The Daily Mail literally co-hosted the party on the night of the White House correspondents' dinner. You could just as easily have written, "Mandelson's close association with Epstein was well known before he was made US ambassador, so why on earth did we pay for his party?" But they don't write that. They pretend it never happened because they are undertaking a reverse ferret. And they're not the only ones. Here's a Daily Mail columnist called Dan Hodges. "Ruthless, cynical and cunning. Why Mandy is the perfect choice as US ambassador." Perfect choice. December 2024. February of this year, "The fact is everyone knew the truth about Mandelson and Epstein. The Prime Minister's claim that he and he alone was kept in the dark over the whole squalid saga is utterly preposterous." The perfect choice was utterly preposterous. These people, I mean, what happens? Are they like the owl in Clash of the Titans? You know, Archimedes the owl in Clash of the Titans, his head goes all the way around. Can they do that? They can do it in print. Gordon Rayner in the Daily Telegraph. The five secrets of Peter Mandelson's unrivaled political genius. His undeniable natural talents have now been supplemented by 40 years of experience. May 2025. February this year, Sir Keir did not need a James Bond or a George Smiley to winkle out the fact that Lord Mandelson was far too close for comfort to Jeffrey Epstein. Should Keir Starmer have appointed Peter Mandelson? No, he bloody shouldn't. Was Keir Starmer alone in thinking it was a good idea? No, he flipping wasn't. That's Dan Hodges. That's the entire Daily Mail co-hosting a party. That's Gordon Rayner of the Daily Telegraph. Back to the Telegraph for something that is much more complicated. This is what Private Eye always describe as the triple ferret. So it's not just a reverse ferret. It's massive wrongness, mea culpa, complete reverse ferret. So Tom Harris writing in the Telegraph, Mandelson is a political genius. He's the right man to deal with Trump. He will bring charm and intelligence to the role. That was in December 2024. Fast forward February this year. I am not alone in the world of journalistic commentary in having woefully misjudged the wisdom of appointing him as Britain's ambassador to the United States. But that does not absolve me. I was wrong. So that's stage two of the complicated triple ferret. And then we reach stage three. Just 4 days later, Starmer appointed Mandelson to the most prestigious diplomatic post that Britain has to offer. It was an egregious and devastating mistake by the Prime Minister. Well, it was the appointment of a political genius who was the right man to deal with Trump and would bring charm and intelligence to the role mere months earlier. And I could go on, actually. Well, I will. Michael Gove. Lord Mandelson will be a thoughtful and original British ambassador to the United States with the skill set to navigate Trump's presidency, Lord Gove has said. In effusive praise from across the political aisle, the former Conservative minister said Mandelson had the breadth of vision to make a success of his new role. Then the middle stage, there's egg on a lot of faces at the moment, and there's a few scraps of yolk and albumin on mine. I am as gullible a duck swept along by the tide in the SW1 pond as any, says Michael Gove, who is not only a former cabinet minister and Conservative Party leadership contender, but of course a journalist of 30 or 40 years standing. But hey-ho, I'm just little old Mickey Gove. You can't expect me to know anything about anything. How did Starmer misjudge Mandelson so badly? Was the headline in the magazine that he edited just a couple of days later. So those are reverse ferrets on the scale of which you probably think is uncommon until you learn the attitude that the same people are taking to the war in Iran. Which leads us back to the question of just how good this will prove to be for Keir Starmer. Douglas is in Dunfermline. Douglas, what would you like to say?
Well, first of all, thanks very much, Jibs. I watched Pierre's Q's yesterday and I thought Starmer did brilliantly well. You know, he got his points across really well, explained what he was doing and why. And you can't see much coverage of that in the newspapers today. And we haven't had much coverage of that in the newspapers this week.
They can't, can they? Because they were telling us he was weak. They were siding with Donald Trump. They were attacking him. So they are doing the John Cleese, aren't they? They don't mention the war.
And Kimmy being off yesterday to insult our troops the way she did, I find was absolutely terrible.
If people missed that, she said they were just hanging around in the Middle East when Keir Starmer then explained exactly the kind of operations they've been undertaking.
Oh, I was going to say, I know somebody who's out there just now and he was deployed not this week, last week.
Really?
And it's just not good enough. You know, there are things happening. You know, the government just doesn't sit around and do nothing. But I think the thing that worries me more is that Starmer's getting hit with what's going on domestically and newspapers are putting all the blame on him, but he's got a cabinet that works with him and they're not standing up to the plate and taking the responsibility that I think they should.
Some of them are. I mean, they do the interview rounds and they get asked stupid questions by people who are silent about their own support for the war or, of course, the fact they used to work for a television station owned by the Iranian state, which is an embarrassment that some people are very keen to keep under wraps. But the cabinet's not being disloyal. They perhaps could be making a slightly stronger case of support.
Well, they're not communicating well, put it that way. Yeah. I certainly don't see them communicating. There was one thing with the Mandelson thing that concerns me a little bit, because I worked for the government and had to get security clearance, and I was able to see top secret documents for 5 years.
Do you have to kill me now?
No.
Oh, good. That's a relief. Carry on.
I was interviewed by the security services, who went into my background, checked my bank account, talked to my friends, said, oh, you go out with Douglas to the pub on a Friday night, what does he drink?
Really?
And they asked me, Douglas, what do you drink? And they checked all my background. Now, security services must have done a report for Mandelson to get access to these top secret papers. I know it came late, but there must be a report somewhere, and that must have gone back to number 10.
Well, there's more to come. At the moment, it's
I don't think they'll ever print that.
It's restricted to reputational risk. They established a possible reputational risk based on evidence that, of course, everybody knew at the time, including all the people that were celebrating the appointment from the rooftops. What do you drink, Douglas? I'm curious now.
Well, I'll have a couple of whiskies now and again.
There we go. I'll give this man the job.
It
goes with the territory, doesn't it? Thank you, Douglas. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Apologies to Clash of the Titans fans. The owl was not called Archimedes. The owl was called Bubo. Archimedes was Merlin's owl in the Disney film about King Arthur, Sword in the Stone. Another absolute classic. But that's interesting, isn't it? Not only did you correct me on that one, Gary. No, it wasn't Gary. But you also worked out why my brain had got a little bit... Did Archimedes make the owl? I think Archimedes made the owl in Clash of... Anyway, I'm getting a bit distracted from the central story, a bit like Cammie Badenoch in PMQs yesterday, although unlike her, I think it's very important that we continue to mention the war. It's Thursday, Mystery Hour is on the way at 12 o'clock. We have, as you'd expect, the latest in Riley's reform roundup, and we are about to make a decision on what we're going to talk about in the next hour of the programme.
On your radio... On the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, there's continued volatility in the oil markets because of the war in the Middle East. It was hoped the release of emergency reserves would force stability yesterday, but Iran has continued to target ships in the Gulf overnight. At one point overnight, Brent crude surged to $100 a barrel for the second time in a week. Imam Rashid is a journalist in the UAE and has told LBC the Strait of Hormuz has become the focus of the Iran conflict.
You've got all the military aggression going on between Iran and Israel, Iran attacking the Gulf states as well with Hezbollah in Lebanon. But it's here where we're now seeing not only military aggression as a result of Iran targeting vessels, but we are seeing the economic effects around the world.
It's emerged ISIS is encouraging its followers to target this summer's World Cup in the US, Canada and Mexico. LBC has learned the terror group has named the tournament as a priority target. Neil Basu is the UK's former head of counter-terror policing.
It's straight out of the ISIS playbook. So they used to have, and I believe they still do, have a monthly magazine which effectively talks about methodology, who you should attack, how you should attack them, tips and tricks for doing that. If any of our listeners want to download that, good luck, because my colleagues will be coming around to see you if you do. It's illegal to possess and use.
It's understood security services are monitoring the situation closely. You can read more on our exclusive story on the LBC app. A minister has argued the payout to Peter Mandelson after he was sacked as ambassador to Washington was value for money. Documents reveal that he received a severance payout of £75,000 from the government. The Cabinet Office Minister Nick Thomas Simmons says the costs could have been far higher. Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. A 17-year-old girl has been shot in the legs in what police in Liverpool are describing as a targeted attack. The teenager was found injured in the Toxteth area in the early hours of this morning. No arrests have been made. And some customers with Lloyds, Halifax and Bank of Scotland claim they've been able to see other people's transactions in their banking apps. Lloyds Banking Group says the issue has been resolved and it's investigating what went wrong. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 44 at 10,310. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
We all love a good meal, but there's no feeling quite like cooking one. Whether it's everyone at yours for a Sunday roast... or after-school sausage and mash. Quick, simple, gone in minutes. One thing brings it all together. Ah, Bisto. The original gravy. Rich, smooth, and unmistakable since 1908. When the gravy makes the dish, make the gravy. Ah, Bisto.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 11 is the time. That one's good. That's a stayer, isn't it? With regards to the Mendelssohn story that is unfolding today and may still have more to come. The defence of giving him 75 grand is that it would cost less than it would to go to court and fight. Do you know how much Mendelssohn asked for in severance payment? Just shy of £600,000. He wanted his entire contract for a 5-year term to be paid out in full, after he was forced to walk the plank as a consequence of being economical with the actuality regarding his continuing and persistent friendship with Jeffrey Epstein long after Epstein was convicted, something that everybody who praised the appointment knew when they praised the appointment. But that line there, that the Daily Mail co-hosted the drinks reception that he threw ahead of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the room was literally full of Daily Mail branding. You will be hearing me mentioning that in the future, whenever we are trying to point out just how utterly broken and morally corrupt these organs and the people that work for them have become. 4 minutes after 11 is the time. We're going to talk about something completely different now, albeit that we will, of course, bring any breaking news to you imminently. Something rather mad has happened with regard to the features that we do on the programme. We've done the reverse ferret special. I hope we didn't miss that. We've got the missing word round on the way. But the unhinged headline, missed information marriage, has now a three-way. We're indulging in a little bit of current affairs troilism on the programme today, because there is a woke watch dimension to unhinged headline and missed information. So, Keith, I don't know if he's up to the job between you and me. You're going to have to hit all three of those buttons, mate, in quite quick succession, because we have a story that that straddles. You can't, don't press them all at the same time, because then it'll just sound like a mess, won't it? So it straddles. We have a story that straddles unhinged headline, missed information, and woke watch. This has never happened before. This is like that New Zealand cricketer getting 5 wickets in a row in a first-class game last week. I'm personally beside myself with excitement. So excited am I, in fact, that I'm confident I won't forget to tell you about this before 11:30 today. But I spent too long wanging on about all the fun that we are having together at the top of the last hour. I want to get straight into the question that is going to dominate most of the next hour. And it's a strange one, really, because it's of a piece with a subject I humbly concede to you I have failed to properly animate on the programme, and I don't understand why. It doesn't, I mean, it happens, of course it happens, nobody's perfect, but I'm a bit weird when Eleanor and I talk about what's happened on the show and occasionally say things like, that didn't go as well as we expected. Many people take that as a reason not to do it again. For example, you might use a focus group, and a focus group will tell you that people don't like this topic. To which my response is, well, then we're not doing our job very well, because that is objectively interesting. And if people aren't interested in it, it's because the presenter is not doing his job or her job properly. Whereas other people will go, well, let's steer clear of that then. I'm built weirdly like that, and I've been doing it long enough to think that my instincts are probably correct. But I've never got this story to sing in the way that I wanted it to. It's a story partly about the nearly 1 million young people who are not in education, employment or training. But it's also a story about the plight faced by young people in this country who are in education, employment or training, or in this case, in employment and training. It's about the generational divide. And I don't understand why I've never nailed it down. Is it because I've not got enough skin in the game yet? That my children are still in full-time education. I've got one in the sixth form and one at university. So I am not fully aware of the gulf in experience that that generation is going to have compared to mine. There's also perhaps a degree of insulation by dint of the fact that we've done okay. And so Mrs. O'Brien and I will be able to insulate our children in part from some of the harsher realities of being young in this country in 2026. I get some of it right. I get some of the buttons. For when I tell you, for example, if you're listening to this as a millennial or as somebody who still dreams of getting on the property ladder, when I tell you that my first mortgage was for 110% of the value of the flat that we bought, your jaw hits the floor. Not only did we not need a deposit, they gave us money because the market was in such heat that they knew by the time I'd signed the documents, by the time we'd signed the documents to buy the house, it would have gone up in value. Such was the state of the property market at that time, at that point in the in the historical cycle. We're going back almost 26 years to the day, 26 years in May, when we signed on the dotted line just before going off on honeymoon. And they gave us 110% of the value of the flat. Never had money like that in our current accounts before, let alone having our names on the deeds of a property. So I get that. That's such a huge illustration. And I used to feel enormous anger when I started doing this job with older callers who would insist that the problem with the young today is that they just don't work hard. So you'd get someone ringing in saying, my husband worked three jobs and we bought our first house in 1954. And I'd say, how much did it cost? And she'd say, 7 pence. And I'd say, and how much did he get paid for the three jobs that he was doing? And she'd say, well, he got paid about 4 pence a year. And you'd say, well, should we work out what the relationship is between what he was earning and what his property cost? And then we'd work it out. And then we'd say, do you know what that relationship is now? The average property price is about 10 times the income of the average 20-something. So how the hell would you have bought a house in 1954 if that ratio had been in place then? And then I get lots of texts saying, James, stop being rude to old ladies. So I don't know what the right way to have handled that would have been, looking back. So there are some huge markers. Some huge markers of just how bad things are, but we never seem to do anything about it. The political machines are tuned to look after pensioners. And listen, this is not a bash pensioners perspective. It's a look after everybody perspective. And young adults, I think, in this day and age, are having an unconscionably bad time of it. And it can't end well. You've now got AI coming up on the outside lane, robbing many of them of the job that they thought they would be doing with varying degrees of success and security for the rest of their naturals. There's a cross-party committee looking into student loans in particular, but also looking at the plight faced by young adults in general. It has been described by the chair, or by the MP for Hackney South, Meg Hillier, as a perfect storm of problems. You're not just talking about student loans, you're also talking about a lack of pensions, you're talking about soaring house prices, and you're talking about the threat from AI. And I want this to work. I want this conversation to be illuminating. And all I want to know is what it's like. And I want the conversation to be conducted in a way that will not only help the people that used to ring me to claim that the only reason why young people can't get on the housing ladder is because they're spending all their money on avocado toast or Netflix subscriptions. I think some of them are possessed of brains that are permeable. I think you can help some people come to a position that hasn't been spoon-fed to them by the usual... Good Lord. 26 years or so I've been doing this... No, 22 years I've been doing this job and I nearly swore then. Like, instead of saying the usual suspects, I nearly used an entirely inappropriate, very Ofcom unfriendly word. Good grief. Anyway, sorry, I digress slightly. Being spoon-fed to them by the usual suspects. And, of course, people like me who don't quite get it, partly because of our own financial security, our own income, partly because of the ages of our children. But we don't quite get it. I've got colleagues in this catchment area, and I am interested in their plight, but it's not a natural subject of conversation for my colleagues to tell me about the relationship between their income and their student loan repayments, plus their rent, their absence of pensions, or if they're very, very lucky and have probably had a little bit of help from mum and dad, their mortgage payments. That the gulf, the generational gulf between, where do we draw the line? Where's the actual Rubicon, do we think? That's a good question to ask. Where's the Rubicon? So we bought our flat in 2000. It's really easy to remember. That's why I proposed, so I'd never forget my anniversary or how many years I'd been married. We bought our flat in May of 2000, so 26 years ago, this May. And we got a 110% mortgage. So that is, what, the brink, the precipice of the Rubicon? Things seem to go south. They went south in 2008, right? The global financial crisis. So I just snuck in. When did the zero deposit mortgage, where did the 100% mortgage get taken off the table? I suspect in about 2008, right? Would it be about that 2008? The 110% mortgage? Was it? So it's about there. isn't it? I was 28 in 2006, born in 1972. If I'd been born 10 years later, I'd have been screwed. I'd have got on the property ladder, but only by dint of my earnings. Getting a deposit together. My earnings were relevant to me getting a mortgage, but getting a 110% mortgage. I want to really highlight the difference between being young then and being young now. And we're pretty clear on where the line is between then and now. It's somewhere in that, say, 5-year window between 2005 and 2010, isn't it? Or even probably the global financial crisis in 2008 was a form of guillotine. So it might be a much smaller window. If the guillotine is 2008, then everybody before that and everybody after that is the then and the now of it. But why? Not why, we know why. Or we know some of the reasons why. I'm interested in the how. What's it actually like? And I suggested to Eleanor, who is in generationally in this catchment area, the 20 to 30 generation, give or take, that we would talk to parents, that parents would provide a really interesting perspective on this, because parents of people aged between 20 and 30 will be in a position to make the comparison. And she quite rightly pointed out that people in the zone will be able to tell us what it's like as well. So we're talking about people in their late 20s and early 30s, in particular with reference to what Meg Hillier is talking about. But of course, if you're a parent and you're looking at your children in their 20s, their early 20s, their mid-20s, up to their mid-30s, so from 20 to 35, you're making comparisons with what life was like when you were that age. You're assembling, aren't you, the raw materials for adult life in terms of relationships, in terms of financial security, in terms of property. I'm fascinated by, on a personal as well as a professional level, the differences between then and now. Okay, and I want you to tell me about that. And you can do it from either end of the telescope. You can do it either as the parent, comparing what life was like for you when you were in that catchment area, let's say 25 to 35 or thereabouts, and comparing it to what life is like for your children. And I want to be shocked by what you have been shocked by. Of all the things that we don't talk about enough, this has got to be one of the biggest. But if you have the ability as a younger person to make comparisons with what your parents experience, then I want to speak to you as well. It's a slightly trickier ask, but I want to know whether you... I want you to tell me what the perfect storm is like. So use me as a whipping boy. A 110% mortgage and a wage that has barely changed. If you went to find, I don't know what the show business editor of a national newspaper is on now, but it won't be much more than what I was on in the year 2000. It actually, in terms of the actual number that I was on then, won't have gone up much. So wages have stayed flat and property prices have rocketed. The ability to get a mortgage has almost disappeared. The more you talk about this, the more you realise that it should be defining almost every level of the national conversation. And it doesn't. That's another question that I'm going to ask you. Why? Why are we only really recognising the horrors of this generation's experience as a consequence of the student loan scandal, the student loans crisis? I'm doing the classic question, the question that underpins many of the finest hours that we spend together. It's not what was it like, but what is it like? Well, and for parents, it's what was it like? Compare being 25 to 35 now with being 25 to 35 prior to 2008, and talk me through the differences, because there is obviously a perfect storm for this generation and these generations. I don't know what we can do about it, but we have to understand it before we can even think about what we might do about it. And the other bit of the question that I want your help with, very simply, is why it's not a bigger deal. 03456060973, because it's our children. I always remember Brexit and the number of parents and grandparents that were voting to make their own children less free and less wealthy. You're convinced that somehow reducing the number of Polish people driving trucks up and down the country would be was such a desirable thing that you were going to make your own children poorer. And this is our children that we're talking about. It's our children and our grandchildren. And they are, do we all buy into a little bit of in my day-itis? They're lazy, they're feckless, I didn't get any help. They're just completely failing to recognise. And I don't want this to sound rude, actually, because there must be loads of decent people who probably just don't get it. You think that your children are a bit woke, is it? Or they're a bit, they're not like you, they haven't got the work out. So we just haven't done the sums to calculate the relationship between income and outcome, you know, between earnings and property prices. You look at your children or your grandchildren and you think they are a little bit, a little bit flabby, you know, a little bit fluffy, a little bit not quite, you know. And then you look at the numbers and you realise that they're actually much tougher than we had to be simply to stay afloat in this day and age. I want the comparisons, all right? And I want your answers to the question of why it's not a bigger deal. You spend so much energy obsessing about the incomes of people who are relatively comfortable, and no energy whatsoever on the people who have been, through no fault of their own, absolutely screwed. Why is it not a bigger deal, given that almost everybody in that category will have parents and grandparents who aren't in it? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 03456060973. Will you tell me to shut up as well? I've been talking a heck of a lot today. It's time to hear some other voices. 11:19 is the time.
LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig, tailored for you.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
I think it's about what you take for granted, isn't it? What I took for granted in my mid-20s compared to what my children will take for granted in their mid-20s, albeit that my children are going to be in a much more privileged position in compared to their peers than I was compared to my peers. But oddly, they'll be in a less privileged position than I was. It's about what you take for granted. Take it for granted that you'll do this, that you'll do that, that you'll have that, that you'll have this. And the generation that we're talking about can't take anything for granted. And I want to know how you negotiate the difference, the comparison, and the knowledge that things are immeasurably worse now. I also, of course, want to know why it's not a bigger deal, politically, electorally, conversationally. David's in Bath. David, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello.
I'm 32 and I'm lucky enough to be a homeowner, but the only reason that I am a homeowner is because my granddad passed away and left me money for a deposit.
Yeah, I'm sorry for your loss.
No, thank you, I appreciate that. But we were originally renting, and our combined salary meant that we couldn't actually afford to have any savings that would be significant enough to put a deposit down for a decent-sized property. Mm. We were originally living in Portsmouth. Obviously, we moved up to Bath now. We were looking at starting a family, and we were in a one-bed flat. So it was kind of wasn't applicable and wasn't kind of suitable. And our rent for a one-bed flat is the same as a three-bed house where we live now.
Good Lord. And this is not an extraordinary situation among your peer group?
No, so I've got quite a few friends who are renting and they've kind of accepted the fact they're going to be renting, you know, and they're not going to be able to get on the property ladder. And it's the same with people at work who are younger than me. So I was mentoring someone who is about 10 years younger than me at work, and he's just kind of resigned to the fact that he's also, even if his parents help him out or anything, that he'll just be renting because house properties are so unaffordable unless someone passes away like they did for us.
And then you get a lump sum. So and exactly. Then that pool narrows with each generation as well.
Yeah.
How big a part of the other story that I can never get to work on the radio do you think this is? The neets, the people who are not you, but the people who have surveyed what you're describing and just sort of decided it's not worth joining in. Do you know anyone in that category?
I think so. I think it's because it doesn't affect them as such. And not only does it not affect them, but they haven't got peers that it doesn't affect them either. So
yes.
There's a lot of people, and even my grandparents, you know, they bought their first house for like £6,000 or something. And the house that they were living in, they bought for about £150,000 at the time that they bought it in 2000. When they passed away, it was £250,000, exactly the same house, but it's grown £200,000 in 20 years. It's crazy how that kind of jump happens, yet salaries obviously don't match it. And then on top of that, you then have to pay an extra tax. Both me and my wife have got Plan 2 student finances.
Yeah, well, this is why the story's in the news, isn't it? Because of the student loan element to it. But it's only a small part of the pie that you're serving up every day, being served up every day. Or a big part of the pie, but not the only part.
It's also prices of obviously things like energy and water and that are going up. So we're in a situation where last year our water went up £20 a month.
Mm.
But we still got the same service, and obviously you can't have any say over it as well. So energy prices are going through the roof, but your salary is just not matching it. So at the end of the day, you've got less in pocket than you did before those things went up as well.
And where does that dread phrase, that's just the way it is, or it is what it is, where does that sit in your sort of consciousness? That idea that this isn't right, or it isn't fair, or it isn't very pleasant, but it is what it is. There is no, this is how it is. This is how things are.
It reduces your, I think worthwhile could be the best way of putting it, because you kind of get bought into a social contract when you're at school. If you're doing your A-levels or IB like I did, you're kind of told, you know, this is going to get you to university and that's going to get you a well-paying job. And we're in a position now where we've got an 18-month-old.
Yeah.
And I'm in a position now where I've just been offered a job with a decent enough pay rise that I can then start to contribute her.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I can now start to contribute to her future and invest in her, so she's not having to wait around for one of us to pass away to be able to afford a house.
And you're already thinking about that when she's 19 months old.
Yeah, because otherwise, it's the same with Americans and their college system. It's like, you want to set them up for the best future possible. You want them to have a better life than you do. And the social contract at the moment is not set up like that, kind of, oh, tough, oh, back in my day we had... Because you're probably going to get people who phone up and say, back in my day we had to...
Well, they won't get on today, because I've taken those calls for years, and everyone's got a limit to their patience. Do your parents understand? Your parents understand? I don't want you to be indiscreet or undiplomatic. But...
I don't have much conversation with my parents.
Really? I'm sorry
for different, things.
Of course.
I appreciate that. But my wife's parents, only when we went to buy a house, when we're looking at buying this house, that's when they understood.
Yeah.
Beforehand, it was, oh, just get on the property ladder, just get on the property ladder.
As if it was as easy today as it was when they did. And that leads me to the final question, which is, why do you think it's not a bigger issue for society?
I think it's not a bigger issue because it affects younger people. And I think a lot of kind of the way that some of the media is set up, I don't include you in this in any way. I think some more kind of, I hate the phrase legacy media, but kind of, you know, some of the places like the Daily Mail and et cetera, and then GBBs and all of those kind of places, they're set up to pander to an older generation that it doesn't affect.
But that's why I asked about your parents and your partner's parents, because they care about you. They care about their children, but they're just not getting the information that they need from either end, either from the media that they rely on, which is, of course, a dwindling power, because the consumers are passing away, and your generation are not replacing them when it comes to buying newspapers from the newsstands. But equally, they're not getting told about it properly by you either. And that's an interesting thing, isn't it? That idea of loving these people more than any other humans on the planet, but not really having a full grasp of what their life is like or what they're... And also, children don't want their parents to feel sorry for them. You want to feel like you're making your own way. David, what a great call. Thank you. 28 minutes after 11 is the time. Empathy is a part of it. In answer to the question of why it's not a bigger deal, Elise suggests a lot of people lack empathy. They just can't relate to things that they haven't experienced firsthand. I think I probably agree with that up to a point. But if we care about anybody that's not us, then our children are going to be fairly near at the top of the list. The political angle from Beatrice: do parents who voted for Tories in 2010 and 2015 ever make the link between Cameron and Osborne's austerity and their own kids not having access to grants or having survivable social security or having a further education system that works and is free or having a country with little growth? So much goes back to the cuts and the hollowing out of our public sector and the social security net. It's coming up to 11:30. I haven't forgotten. I will be introducing you to the miraculous marriage of three separate things on the program in one single story. Unhinged Headline, Missed Information and Woke Watch, all in the same story after the latest headlines with Dominic Ellis.
There's been further volatility in the price of oil after three commercial ships were attacked in the Gulf. The Strait of Hormuz, a key waterway for energy shipments, remains effectively closed because of the conflict in the Middle East. It's emerged ISIS is encouraging its followers to target this summer's World Cup in the US, Canada and Mexico. LBC has learned the terror group has named the tournament as a priority target. And some customers using Lloyds, Halifax and Bank of Scotland apps say they've been able to see other people's transactions on their accounts. Lloyds Banking Group has apologised and says the issue has been resolved. LBC weather: windy with heavy rain moving across northern areas of the UK, patchy rain and bright spells in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
Dating apps? Easy. Online shopping? Simple. Banking app? Sorted. Life admin? Ugh. That's what a digital ID could change. And the government is opening a conversation to make it work for you. Your voice will shape the final product. So search Digital ID Consultation to have your say. Digital ID, making public services work for you.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BitVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out. They've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing. And then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Rednap. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus, terms and conditions apply. Gamblerware.org.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
11:32 is the time. Right, we're about to make history. Okay, this is the radio equivalent of a moon landing. Or, do you remember when that ship got stuck in the Panama Canal? Getting it out again. It's the radio equivalent of those kind of moments. We have three regular features on this programme: Unhinged Headline, Missed Information and Woke Watch. And today there is a story that brings them all together in an entirely organic and extraordinary fashion. So, we will begin with...
Unhinged headline.
England's new Badger banknotes tell a dismal story of national decline, writes the previously sensible Tom Tugendhat in, you guessed it, the Daily Telegraph. As Jonathan Portes of King's College points out, it's only a couple of weeks since someone made a headline generator for Daily Telegraph comment pieces, and yet here we are already contemplating its obsolescence because the real Telegraph headlines are now even madder than the Alistair Heath headline generator. So England's new Badger banknotes tell a dismal story of national decline is the...
Unhinged headline.
Which brings us, I think, inexorably towards...
Woke Watch.
No. I told you it wasn't going to work.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. Whew, that was close. We nearly lost an astronaut there on the moon landings. So, this actual story, which you may be aware of, is about a suggestion that public figures on banknotes get replaced by wildlife. Otters, beavers, badgers, and the like. It's several years off, and it's not even guaranteed that it is going to happen. The final decision will be made by Andrew Bailey, the governor of the Bank of England. But here's the crucial point. It was a public consultation. Everybody had an opportunity to contribute. 44,000 people did. There were also focus groups, all of which were asking what they would like to see on banknotes. It was, if you like, a democratic exercise. It is, if you prefer, the will of the people, because these were the numbers. About 60% of respondents said they wanted to see nature, particularly wildlife native to the UK. So British wildlife for British banknotes. That came ahead of architecture, came in at about 56%. Wildlife came in at 60%. Historical figures, which is, of course, where we are currently, came in at about 38%. And then arts, culture and sport at about 30%, with innovation and noteworthy milestones coming in fifth and sixth place, respectively. You may know that wildlife already appears on some banknotes. Up in Scotland, they've got mackerel, otters, red squirrels and ospreys. And as far as I'm aware, the world has not stopped in Scotland, where they currently have wildlife on banknotes. But to look at the weirdos on social media and in the pages of the Daily Telegraph and their response to this story, you'd think it was the end of civilization as we know it. And even the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Ed Davey, has got involved.
Now they're going to take Winston Churchill off our fivers. Can you believe it?
Oh, go on, play that again. It's got Jerusalem in the background.
Now no, they're going to take Winston Churchill off our fivers. Can you believe it?
All earthly things above. I love that hymn. They've all gone absolutely bonkers. It's a public consultation. It already happens in Scotland. It's not even guaranteed to occur, and it's not due to unfold for several years. But Billy Bunch of Numbers on Twitter with a bulldog avatar is adamant that this is proof that Keir Starmer eats babies or something. So, now you know the actual facts of the story, but please don't let them stand in the way of your absolute fury that they are putting a badger on a banknote which tells a dismal story of national decline. That's the end of...
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. And that brings us, almost magically, to...
Woke Watch.
Which we haven't done for a while. But guess who's jumped on the bandwagon, despite the facts being completely at odds with the feelings that he's trying to engender? You guessed it, and mine, everybody's favourite creepy uncle, Nigel Farage. The Bank of England is replacing Winston Churchill with a picture of a beaver on our banknotes. This is the definition of... Woke, says Nigel Farage. Overlooking the fact that the definition of woke is actually being opposed to racism and entrenched discrimination and prejudice. But since one of the facts ever stood in Nigel Farage's way, he was calling for war last week and he was insisting that we shouldn't be having one this week. So there it is. The first time and probably the last time in living memory, a single story that manages to encapsulate...
Missed information.
Unhinged headlines.
Oh, do that again. I loved that.
Missed information.
Unhinged headline.
And it's all about some banknotes that quite possibly will never even come into existence. And if they do, well, just head up to Scotland to find out how scared and how worried you should be. And you think I exaggerate how bonkers this country has become. In the words of Logan Roy in Succession, you are not serious people. 11:38 is the time. Back to what it's like to be young. David is in Tottenham. David, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James.
Hello, David.
I think that
you
we
nodded off there, didn't you, mate? You nodded off there, didn't you?
I didn't. I've been watching a bird nesting.
Oh,
going
lovely.
In there. It's beautiful.
What sort of bird is it?
I'm not an ornithologist. It looks to me like a crow.
Oh, okay. We got goldfinch on our feeders finally. I've been waiting for about 3 months to get them. Do you know what the collective noun is for goldfinches?
No.
It's a charm, David. A charm.
Oh, how lovely.
Isn't that a charm of goldfinches? Anyway, where were we?
I think we go back to Thatcher. I think we go back to the right to buy. I grew up in Tottenham on a council estate, and nobody had an aspiration to buy a property. Nobody.
Right.
Then suddenly the right to buy came in. My parents, my friend's parents, all thought, yes, we can buy a property. And then what's happened is that their children have gone on to buy a property. But when I bought my property, about the same time as you, just a little bit before, as you rightly said, you didn't need a deposit.
No.
So we were very much on an even playing field here. My parents had nothing and certainly couldn't stomp up a deposit. But my wages were probably comparable to yours. So we were on a very much an even playing field here. Now, you know, fast forward.
Have you got children?
I have. Right. I've got two. I've got a 30-year-old and a 26-year-old.
Oh, smack in the catchment area then. And then it's a completely different world that they inhabit from the one that we inhabited.
The only possible way, and it's not just them, but it's sure. all their peers, their friends, bank of mum and dad.
Yeah?
Bank of mum and dad. So for kids who haven't got parents who have purchased a property, they have zero chance. Zero chance. It's not even an aspiration, not even a dream.
So it's going to entrench the division, oddly. So the council house sales, widely regarded as being an aspirational policy that opened up opportunity to people to whom it had previously been denied. But of course, the children are people who didn't avail themselves of the opportunity to buy their council houses. And then the millions of people living in the private sector rental world are going to be, like inconceivably less equipped to help their own children get onto the property ladder. And then more and more people who are at the lower end of the property owning classes are not going to be able to sustain it for their own children, or they're going to still have an awful lot of mortgage left to pay off when they finally shuffle off this mortal coil. So the next big social divide, and it's going to be bloody huge, is between families where parents can help their children buy a property and families where they can't, regardless of whether they've actually got a property themselves.
Yes, and they can engineer a mortgage product so that parents, instead of taking equity out of their house, they will take it out automatically with regards to their children's mortgage, and the mortgage term will be over 50 or 60 years, as they do in Japan, rather than over 25 years or 30 years, as they
That's
do
really
here
good
now.
Point. Why do you think we don't talk about it more?
I think we do, but I think that there's always going to be this divide between haves and have-nots, and very, very unfortunately. And I think it's heartbreaking that there are children out there, or young people, I should say, young people, who would love nothing more than have the security of owning their own home. But the fact that social housing has been just decimated, it means that what are the alternatives of rental? Rental is very, very expensive.
And of course, I remember the first time I realised this, I think I did a lap of honour, mate, because I was so pleased with it as a summary of what was going on in the world, that these young people can afford to buy a property. They're just buying it for somebody else. They're buying it for a landlord who was able to cobble together a deposit. And the Renters' Rights Act is going to try to address some of this entrenched injustice and inequality, but the first thing that it's going to do is reduce the number of properties that are available to rent. That's the next big property story on the horizon. I don't know whether you're aware of this or not, but my friends who still rent have been telling, and one of them needs to move, and he's been telling me, been regaling me, no less, with just how difficult it is at the moment, because so many landlords are getting out of the market in preparation for the new rules that are being brought in correctly, oddly, by this government. David, thank you. There it is. I mean, the idea, I'm sure a certain type of phone-in host could still do it, but the idea that it is a valid contribution to this conversation to claim that things were much easier in my day, therefore it must be young people's fault, is just so witless that it barely merits a mention anymore. Caitlin's in Acton. Caitlin, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James.
Hello.
I'm 30 years old. I've only been able to purchase my property with the help of my grandparents and my parents, with inheritance and money saved. I appreciate that that's not going to be a position that many people my age are in.
Well, you may not even be able to do the same for, I mean, if you want children and you have children, you may not even be able to do the same for them in the future.
Yeah.
Because of the relationship between our income and our outgoings, your generation's
exactly.
income and outgoings.
That's even a consideration I'm making myself as to whether I can even afford to have children. I don't know whether that's even going to be feasible for me.
Yeah.
I think that we're just so entrenched in what you were saying, you know, in this, the way that the past government for the past 14 years has led us into this kind of mess. And I think we need to also acknowledge that, I graduated in 2017. Along with myself, you know, the early stages of our career, we were hit with COVID and all of the kind of job losses that happened in that period of time. It's really kind of dented our ability.
Perfect storm is something of an understatement. Do your own parents understand the extent of your situation?
Yes, yeah.
They do, because a lot don't, yeah. I think. I got an extraordinary message from Carl about a year ago, and he sent me a little bit of an update on it. And it wasn't in any way criticising his dad, but the number of parents who probably haven't really got a clue what their children are facing in this way is going to be fairly huge, isn't it? And the last thing you want to do is go cap in hand to mum and dad asking for help.
Yeah. I also think, you know, with the student loan situation, I am unfortunately part of the Plan 2 group.
Mm.
And so I think it's very unclear to a lot of people about what the actual ramifications of that are.
It seems to have been an appalling enactment, doesn't it? I suspect that they're going to do something about this. And I don't care who takes the credit for it, frankly, because I care only about the plight of people like you caught in the pincers of it. But it seems to me that that when Martin Lewis is on his high horse, the whole world should be paying attention. And he's previously been very sanguine about student loans. It's these changes to them that have got him in high dudgeon, to the point where he had to re-educate Cammy Badenoch live on the television, although, of course, that would be a waste of breath and time for everybody involved. But I think you're gonna get some good news on that front. But whether or not it's too little, too late remains to be seen. Thank you, Caitlin. I'm moving on only because Mystery Hour's around the corner. We've got Riley's Reform Roundup, and as promised, my favourite missing word round of all time. Are you ready for this, Keith? You don't even know what this is, do you? This is the best that you'll ever hear. All right, well, my favourite ever. You're probably not going to care. Are you ready? Could Premier League learn from blanks? Answer to corner chaos. Could Premier League learn from blanks? Answer to corner chaos. Can you fill in that blank with an enormous clue that it's my favourite missing word round of all time? Once more with feeling. Could Premier League learn from blanks? Answer to corner chaos.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Having assured the nation, speaking in the House of Commons in September that, and I quote, full due process, close quotes, was followed in the appointment of Lord Mandelson, Sir Keir Starmer would seem to be in a ticklish spot, because clearly it was not. Paymaster General, Minister for European Union Relations, Nick Thomas-Simmons, who joins me now.
The Prime Minister's taken responsibility and, most importantly, has apologised to Epstein's victims.
He apologises to the victims, yet he appointed someone to this high office who he knew retained close links with the most infamous paedophile on the planet. Don't give me this idea that the sympathies are there.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders,
surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders.
Shh. Book clubbers,
are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer, all in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR, and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 10 to 12. I'll get it out of the way early, shall I? It's flipping Kidderminster.
I mean, you wait. I mean, I've all my life for Kidderminster to feature in a story that would lend itself to the missing world round.
Could Premier League learn from Kidderminster's answer to corner chaos?
I also love the fact that lots of you had seen this story already, and whether you like it or not, you immediately thought of me, didn't you? Yeah? Yeah, you see? Yeah, it's marketing, that is.
So, our manager, Adam Murray, has responded to chaos in the corner, in the penalty box during corner kicks by taking all our players back to the, well, not all of them, but taking a lot of our players back to the halfway line. And of course, Arsenal are scoring from corners, for fun at the moment. So the suggestion is that Premier League teams could emulate Kidderminster Harris. There's a phrase I've never heard before. Premier League teams could emulate Kidderminster Harris. Do you know what we were known for previously? Pies. We had the best pies. And we don't anymore. The contract changed, and Brian Murdoch, who was responsible for making the pies that were once the pride of Agbara, passed away some years ago. So the pies that many people still think of fondly, they're still good, don't get me wrong. The pies are still good, but they are not the same pies as when our pies were famous. That's the only time ever that Kidderminster has been at the top of the league in football. I mean, all the leagues in footballing terms. But now we are leading the world. Could Premier League learn from Kidderminster's answer to corner chaos? So we've nearly done it. We did the reverse ferret special. We've done the finest missing word round of all time. We did the threesome, the unhinged headline, the missed information and the woke watch, all involving the same story. There's only one bit of the jigsaw left before Mystery Hour. It's Riley's Reform Roundup.
I like the jingle. Thank you, James. There's a few today. I've got five for you. A few of them you've touched on already. Let's start with one of those you've touched on. This, it's been spoken about on sort of range of news programmes. There was this consultation on banknotes, in the UK. It will be several years before they're issued, but essentially they asked the public what they would like to see, and the public said they would like a wildlife theme on future banknotes. And Nigel Farage, said on his social media that it was woke and posted this message.
Our great British banknotes produced by the Bank of England, and they have on them giant figures like Winston Churchill, and yet they're proposing we replace people like him with a picture of a beaver. No, I'm not making it up. This is actually what they're proposing. This is our PC mad and loony. Everyone's gone, including the Bank of England. I think it's absolutely crackers.
Far be it from me to defend the man, but he doesn't actually sound like he means it on this one. It does just sound as if someone said he's going to have to do this. We've also, of course, got to reflect upon the fact that Ed Davey joined in as well, despite the fact that this is what the public want. Two questions then. Why do they hate democracy, and why do they hate British wildlife?
Well, he would argue that British wildlife has its place, just not on the banknotes.
Do you think he knows that it was a public consultation and that this is literally a vote from people on what they would like to see? Or does he just pretend?
If he'd heard Andrew Marr's programme last night, Andrew Marr had the chief note officer, I can't remember what the exact title is, who came up with this, who was explaining that why they came to this decision, because, as you mentioned, the public voted for it in the consultation. And the caption that went alongside it, James, just to give your listeners the full picture: Bank of England is replacing Winston Churchill with a picture of a beaver on our banknotes. This is the definition of woke.
And in Scotland, they've already got it. Ospreys, otters.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, and the world hasn't stopped. Well, I should check, actually, with my Scottish correspondent. Has the world stopped in Scotland? Oh, I knew. Oh, everything's fine. Carry on, Henry.
Another one we've touched on, but there's an update. This is the investment from Nigel Farage into Kwasi Kwarteng's Bitcoin firm. Now, he's the executive chairman of this firm, Kwasi Kwarteng. It's called Stack. Before we had spoken about it...
hang on a minute.
Well...
No, I mean, sure. Surely there's a bit of history between these two characters.
Well, let me play you. This is after we'd spoke, sadly, so we didn't have time for it at the time. This is what Stack have released, a video of Kwasi Kwarteng.
I'm delighted to announce the participation of Nigel Farage. Nigel Farage is a great political disruptor, but beyond all of that, he's someone who's championed Bitcoin over many years, and we're delighted to have him. To have a senior frontline politician, but also someone who's passionate about financial services, is not only a privilege, but a huge endorsement for what we're trying to do. From my own personal point of view, I think this is one of the most exciting developments in the financial architecture of the United Kingdom.
I've gone mad. That's another ferret there. So have we got the ferret noise? Thank you. Because they used to hate each other, these two characters, and that's not just an opinion, it's counting.
Right. Look, I think they flirt with some pretty unsavory elements, and we can't pretend racism doesn't exist. We can't pretend that a lot of pretty unsavory characters are attracted to his message. I'm not saying he's racist. I mean, I know him quite well.
Kwasi Kwarteng. Well, quite extraordinary. What is he on about? He also said over the weekend he was engaging with the Treasury for help over industries affected by the spike in energy prices. And after those comments, a Treasury source said that Kwarteng had made things up. Well, Kwasi, you may have been a very, very good student at Oxford University. I'm just not quite sure you're right to be in charge of British business.
I think this Putin thing is very bad for him because he presents himself as a normal guy, man in the pub with a beer. Mm. And this is quite cranky stuff. But your party is all over the place in terms of financial, fiscal responsibility.
Well,
you're spending more on welfare.
No, we just announced the biggest welfare cuts in history.
I think that's fiscally irresponsible.
Working people...
So £215,000 of his own money, apparently. I don't know whether he's got it from GBBs or shilling for gold bullion companies or doing those cameos where he keeps accidentally praising paedophiles and terrorists and that kind of thing. But he's got £215,000 to spare.
It's gone through the media company, just to be clear. It's through his media company.
And he's given it to Kwasi Kwarteng to invest in Bitcoin, despite considering that Kwasi Kwarteng wasn't fit to run the country, or the country's economy, the country's finances.
It was £215,000 in Stack, which is seen as a vote of confidence.
I've got one as well today. You may have missed this one. And it does raise the possibility of who Nigel Farage would like to see on British banknotes. I'm going to come up with a suggestion. Mm. Vladimir Putin. Do you think? I'd quite like to see, because he has suggested that Iran, and I quote, potentially poses a bigger danger than Putin poses to us. So how would a Kremlin shill respond to the crisis in the Middle East? Answer, by claiming that Iran is a bigger threat to world peace than Russia. It's extraordinary. To be absolutely clear, it's his very close friend, former protege and leader of the party in Wales, who actually is in jail currently for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge. To the very, very best of our knowledge, Farage punts these positions entirely for free. But he has suggested on Tuesday, in a conversation with the New Statesman, that he thinks Iran poses a greater threat, but a potentially bigger danger than Vladimir Putin, which of course reminds everybody who pays attention to such things, i.e. pretty much no BBC journalists, of this.
If you poke the Russian bear with a stick, don't be surprised when he reacts.
almost word for word what Nathan Gill also said in the European Parliament. And Nathan Gill, of course, is currently in jail for accepting bribes from a Kremlin stooge. Sorry, Henry, I broke your flow.
That's all right. There's two done so far. There's three more, but two of them are very quick. So two quickies. Firstly, there's another councillor who has resigned, this time from Hertfordshire County Council, less than a year after he was elected with a majority of 28 votes. Tony Hill won the Flamstead End and Turnford division on Broxbourne Borough. And it was very close between him and the Conservatives. He's now stood down, though. He was criticised among some councillors for poor attendance. His exact reasoning for resigning isn't clear yet. Another story, this is number four. Nigel Farage has attacked pollsters, in particular YouGov.
Stop it.
He's attacked the company YouGov, which was, of course, founded by Nadim Zahawi, who's now in Reform UK.
Stop this.
The pollster YouGov has shown the Conservatives narrowing the gaps. And Nigel Farage has said YouGov used, quotes, bizarre adjustments to, his words, suppress the true figures. In a post on social media, he said, no wonder their share price has fallen by over 80% in recent years. Now, this is because they have Reform leading in the polls on 23% of the vote. That is unchanged. Mm. However, the Conservatives have gone up slightly. They've gone up from 17 points to they've risen by 3 percentage points, in fact, to 19 points. And Nigel Farage has said that he's questioning the figures from YouGov.
He attacked them as well, didn't they, when they found that the... was it YouGov or a different poller that the percentage of the plurality of his party wanted to deport people who were
that
British.
Was Servation.
That was which so is... he's attacking all the pollsters, having been boasting for the best part of 2 years about how brilliant the polls were.
YouGov haven't commented, but Nadim Zahawi, who did work for YouGov, he founded it,
very made
said,
his money, I think.
It does feel like my old team are an outlier.
And one more.
One more, which is the biggie, very quickly, because now you're running out of time.
No, don't worry.
We have a story we can reveal to you now, James. This is a sort of original content on the Reform headlines. There's been an official complaint lodged over the Reform UK vice chairman at West Northamptonshire Council. He's been accused of deeply offensive and sexist comments during an International Women's Day celebration.
You know what? I can't even be bothered to do the surely not thing and throw my hands up. A Reform UK councillor being deeply, what is it, sexist or racist?
This is offensive and sexist.
Deeply sexist. What, really? A Nigel Farage fanboy being deeply sexist? Surely not. Carry on.
Speaking to a fellow councillor and some members of the public at the International Women's Day event for West Northamptonshire, he allegedly said that, this is Councillor York, by the way, who's the deputy chairman of the council, said some women should never have left the kitchen. It's also alleged he went on to cite Angela Rayner as an example of women in political positions who fall short. He was called out by former Conservative councillor James Hill, yeah, who asked if he wanted to row back and asked if he was being serious, after the councillor apparently said, what have they, as in women, done to the country? I have not had a response back from Councillor Peter York, but I have spoken with Laura, who was there at the event. She's a women's rights activist. She said she's deeply concerned, not least because he's now set to become the chairman of Reform's West Northamptonshire Council this coming May. She described the views as archaic.
Remember the hat trick of reasons why anybody would support a Donald Trump or a Nigel Farage or anybody of that ilk is always there and always right. The racism, the misogyny, and the climate change denial. One, two, or three of the above. Every single time. How many stories is that this week?
Eight on the first day, yeah. Four on the second. Four yesterday and five today.
21 today?
21.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Back tomorrow.
And you bought one as well, of course. Two. Oh, maybe we had that.
23. So, I mean, crikey. It's getting bigger and bigger every week, the Riley's Reform Roundup.
Mm.
Back tomorrow?
Depends if we get anything. Depends if anything moves on between now and
tomorrow.
Never know. Right.
Some breaking news for you. We now have the list of people that Nigel Farage would rather see on British banknotes, and I was right. It is Vladimir Putin alongside Oswald Mosley and Enoch Powell. It's 12:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, there's been further volatility in the price of oil after three ships were attacked by Iran in the Gulf. The Strait of Hormuz, a key waterway for energy shipments, remains effectively closed because of the conflict in the Middle East. Brent crude surged to $100 a barrel overnight before dropping slightly later.
Energy analyst Maurizio Carilli has told LBC price pressures are likely to continue for some time.
Until the Strait becomes available again to commercial shipping and oil tankers can restart transit to it, the oil price will continue to experience upward pressure. And recent attacks by Iran on oil tankers in the area, as well as on oil and gas facilities, frankly do not help.
LBC has discovered that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer. The terror group has named the event as a priority target to commit attacks. Security services are understood to be monitoring the situation. You can read more on our exclusive story on the LBC app. Tech firms are being urged to do more to protect children online, with regulators warning that current safeguards are not strong enough. Companies have been given until next month to explain what action they're taking around age checks and grooming protections. Ofcom's chief executive, Dame Melanie Dawes, has spoken to LBC.
We're turning the public spotlight on them. They've got to account to us by the end of April on a number of fronts. You know, we'll then publish a report card on them in May and we'll move into enforcement where we need to.
The waiting list for routine hospital treatment in England has fallen for the third month in a row. 6.13 million patients were waiting at the end of January. That's down from 6.17 million in December. And some customers using Lloyds, Halifax and Bank of Scotland apps say they've been able to see other people's transactions on their accounts. Lloyds Banking Group has apologised and says the issue has now been resolved. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 13 at 10,340. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with heavy rain moving across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain and bright spells in the south, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, what a welcome relief this is. How many hours have we done on topics that weren't Iran so far this week? Two. So we've only done 3 hours in the last 2 weeks. So 5 times 3, 15. And then it's Thursday, so that would be 12, 27. So we've done 24 hours, I think. 23? Anyway, aren't we... That's like a whole day, as Keith points out. Anyway, what blessed relief it is to have a little bit of fun. And I can say that with a degree of confidence, because we always have fun, don't we? Don't we? Well, I do. Between 12 and 1 on Thursdays, Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. If you don't know what it is, then you are in for a treat. And if you do know what it is, then obviously you're also in for a treat, but you don't need me to point that out, because you already know what's going to happen. If you've got a question that needs an answer, 03456060973. And, well, hang on. Crescendo. Because Henry was in the studio there. You're a very weird creature. Have I ever told you that? You're a very strange creature, because if there's no phone in the final bit of the hour that precedes Mystery Hour, the switchboard is generally quite a lot quieter than it is when there is a phone in. Obviously, part of this will depend on whether or not I remember to remind you that Mystery Hour is around the corner, and on this occasion I think I forgot. But quite a lot of people are there on Thursdays at 12 noon with their finger poised above the redial button, waiting to jump on to the juggernaut that is Mystery Hour. But you are a bit, you are a creature of habit, you are, you know. When I don't have phone in the final bit of the previous hour, it somehow tells you that there's no phone-in element when there is. So anyway, this is a phone-in. It's Mystery Hour, and you have a better chance of getting through now than you did last week. 03456060973. Ooh, do you want to know something really interesting? So I had Jeremy King on the podcast this week. I don't know if he's going to be the one that we release on Friday, tomorrow even, because we've got quite a few in the file at the moment, in the archive. But Jeremy King is sort of doyen of London restaurateurs. there's barely a headline-making restaurant that's been open in London in recent years that he was not involved in. He's no longer involved with the Wolseley, for example, or the Ivy. But he was the brains behind, along with his partner Chris Corbin, he was the brains behind the Caprice, and he's just reopened Simpsons in the Strand, which is an absolute grand dam of a space that's been empty for 3 or 4 years. But he said something to me and he said it on tape, that I can't wait for Clive Ball to find out about. Because he said that when he's running restaurants, and he is the best sort of restaurant runner there's ever been, in this country, he can always tell when it's a full moon. Just by the way that people behave. He can always tell when it's a full moon by the way that people behave in the restaurant. And Clive's exactly the same. I'm sure Clive said to me many, many years ago that he can always tell when it's a full moon. And I do it on the show sometimes. If we take like 3 calls in a row that are all a little bit hat stand, I say to Keith, I say, is it a full moon? And it often is. And that's even at 10 o'clock in the morning. Imagine what it would be like at 10 o'clock at night. And it turns out that restaurateurs have exactly the same suspicions, that there is a relationship between the behaviour of the patrons, the patrons, or the callers, or whatever you prefer to be called, and the fact that it's a full moon. And it's the same with the switchboard. You somehow, if it's not a phone-in, just before we do another phone-in, the phone-in that we're doing after the non-phone-in kicks off a little bit more slowly. Anyway, I've undone that now because the switchboard's almost full. There's one phone line free. You can have it if you dial 03456060973. If you submit my favourite contribution of the week, you will win a board game. Or, indeed, the travel edition of the Mystery Hour board game. It's worth owning both of them. They're both very different, but also similar in many ways. You can find out more about what I am currently discussing at mysteryhour.co.uk. Because this is a proper grown-up radio programme presented by proper grown-ups for proper grown-ups, you can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. If you hear somebody ask a question to which you know the answer, then the number remains the same, 03456060973. That'll do, I think. Should we just crack on? I think we should just crack on. Don't hang about. Keep trying if you can't get through, because it's a very fluid switchboard. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us. With no further ado, Matt's in Hampton Court. Matt, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Matt.
I hope it's not too hat-stand for you. But
I like that word. I've just resurrected that. I haven't used that for years. I'm going to be using it again moving forward. Carry on, Matt.
It's a great word.
It is, isn't it?
Why is it, when you use a different shampoo for the first time, or after using a previous shampoo, why does your hair always feel cleaner and squeakier? And then when you go back to your original shampoo, your hair feels cleaner and squeakier again.
Have you checked this with others?
Yeah, this occurred to me earlier this week while in the shower, and I accidentally used my wife's shampoo. And then I realised that I've always experienced this. When you go to, like, one of those budget hotels that I won't name, and you use the soap dispenser on the wall full of cheap, nasty shampoo, even then, your hair feels squeakier and cleaner. So there's something about using a different shampoo that makes your hair feel cleaner. And I've checked it with a few people during the week, and they've all said, yeah, they've experienced it too. When you go back to your original shampoo, it feels cleaner and squeakier again.
It's going to have something to do with natural oils.
You reckon?
Or oils in general, isn't it? It's going to have something to do with the relationship between oils and astringents, I reckon, Matt.
Yeah, well, you could be right, but there's a chemical thing going on, isn't there?
That'll be the astringents, you see. I'm not nicking this, by the way. I'm gonna put it on the board. And I recognise
what an astringent is. I'll have to.
Nor am I, but no one's checking. There's no steward's inquiries. Why does a new shampoo, regardless of, but if you change shampoo, your hair will feel squeakier. That's it, really.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Why? 03456060973. And I love the fact that the responses to your call, Matt, veer between one person saying the shampoo thing is true and another person saying, yep, definitely hat stand. 12 after 12 is the time. Terry's in Belfast. Terry, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Why is there no Aldi in Northern Ireland?
That sounds like the first line of a joke.
No, well, you know, if you have to pay full prices, it's not very funny.
Well, so, have you not got a Lidl either?
No, this is the context point, right? We don't get Waitrose, but then we don't have Waitrose in the Southern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland.
Right.
We have lots of Lidls in Northern Ireland. We have lots of Lidls in the Republic of Ireland.
Well, what are you moaning about then?
Because Aldi steaks are better. Right?
You might get sense on now.
When you're going to where...
How do you know? How do you know Aldi steaks are better if you've never been to one?
Because when I'm in Scotland for work or in Dublin for work, I got to go and buy steaks and bring them home, right?
So you go to Aldi to buy the steaks?
Yeah, because we're not made of money, right? There's a cost of living crisis, right? I mean,
there's lots of things that there aren't. You put the steaks in your suitcase and take them home?
No, I drive.
There's ones right on the west.
Scotland?
You drive to Scotland from Northern Ireland?
For work, yeah.
How do you keep them cool?
It's like on your way home, you get them, you're home in 6 hours, it's no big deal. You're getting off topic.
It's a bit risky,
right?
Mate.
you're well cooked, you're fine. But the point is, right, we don't have Waitrose, we don't have Morrisons, but then we don't have those in Ireland at all. Right?
So it's because they're in the south, but they're not in the north.
It's a very specific thing. And obviously, in Northern Ireland, insurance doesn't apply to Northern Ireland. We get all that. But Aldi's the weird one. It's the outlier because they have it in the EU, in Republic of Ireland, but they don't have it in Belfast. And some of the stores are like 10 miles or less from the border. So the infrastructure, you think, would be there.
Well, yeah, but it's such a weird question because they just don't want to open in. It's nothing personal. And there's lots of businesses that are probably... Have you got a Lush in Northern Ireland?
We do, I believe.
I just picked that because that's my favourite shop at the moment. No particular reason.
Past that, the smell gives me a headache.
No, mate, you don't know what you're missing. The Lush's quiet. Since Mark Constantine came on the podcast, the owner of Lush, or the founder of Lush, I've been getting into the products and I've fallen in love with them. Absolutely smitten with everything Lush.
If I may say with respect, you don't have a caveat that these questions have to make sense.
You make a very, very valid point, actually.
Right.
I apologise, Terry. Sorry, mate.
No, it's fine.
I'm holding you to standards that I never observe myself.
No, like squeaky... I say Aldi's more important than squeaky hair.
So what... Well, it's a view. Why are there no Aldis in Northern Ireland?
That's the question.
0345 6060 973. It's 12:15.
LBC.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
This week at Lidl, you can afford to be mum's favourite. Treat her with a gorgeous Mother's Day bouquet from £1.89 and show your love with a bottle of Alini Prosecco Spumante, only £4.69 with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus excludes Scotland, while stocks last. Offer ends 18th of March. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
My name is Kathleen and this is my NHS story. Having a persistent cough is quite socially embarrassing, so I went to see a respiratory nurse who sent me off for an x-ray at my local CDC, and they were offering Sunday appointments and evening appointments, which was great.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
16 minutes after 12. I just have to issue a quick apology. Just before the 12 noon news, I claimed that Nigel Farage had revealed what characters he wanted to appear on British banknotes instead of Beavers. And I suggested that it was Oswald Mosley, Vladimir Putin, and Enoch Powell. I'm very, very sorry. I missed one off.
Bernard Manning.
It's 12:17. Mystery Hour continues. Rachel is in Hay-on-Wye. What a beautiful part of the world. Rachel, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
I was just watching the TV the other night and a whale popped up on the screen. It was a wildlife programme.
Oh, well, yes. I was going to say, it would have been a bit of a shock if you were watching the football.
And it's something I've always noticed but never really thought about. Obviously, a lot of them, not all whale types, but some of them have barnacles all over their heads and all over their faces.
They do.
And it just made me wonder, how do they get there? Because obviously, whales don't ever really stop moving. and they don't find they don't spend a lot of time, I assume, scraping around the bottom of the oceans. So right. How do they get there, and what's the benefit for them?
Well, you've got two questions there, madam, and that's not really permitted. I mean, I don't think the first bit's that confusing, is it?
Why are they something that's floating through the water and then they attach to the whale, or is it something that do they move around and then climb onto the whale?
I think they're just floating around and then they land on a whale and then they.
How often do you see barnacles floating around in the water?
All the time. All the time. I can barely dip a toe in the sea without coming across a barnacle, a lonely barnacle, a lonely barnacle. It might be a verruca, actually. I mean, there might not be any benefit. Do you remember biology? There was parasitic, symbiotic, and then there's another one that's neither parasitic nor symbiotic. So they might not offer... It's obviously of benefit to the barnacle because the whale moves around much faster than the barnacle could. But I don't know that there's any benefit to the whale, personally.
No, that's what... Yeah, I'm aware it wouldn't be a benefit to the whale. It was more why the barnacles might, because obviously...
How? We'll do the how of it. How do the barnacles get on the whales?
That'll do, yeah.
That's it. And then if they sound really clever, I'll ask them the other bit about benefits.
Sounds good to me.
Thank you very much, Rachel. 19 minutes after 12 is the time. 03456060973 is the number that you need if you can answer the question about squeaky hair, Northern Irish Aldis, or barnacles on whales. And, of course, if you have a question of your own, 03456060973 is also the number that you need. Lot of full moon stuff coming in. I used to be the night manager at a top London hotel, writes Martin. The security team and I knew when it was a full moon, based entirely on guest behaviour. And this one, my wife is an A&E doctor and swears by people's behaviour being exacerbated by a full moon. Eleanor wants to know what the behaviour is. People just go a bit bonkers. They just go a bit bonkers. You know, bonkers. Like a bit bonkers. Alan's in Worcester. Alan, question or answer?
Hello, James. Question, please.
Hello, Alan.
Are you up for a quick bit of flattery before we start?
Yeah, always.
Okay, I started listening to you during lockdown in 2020 when I was working from home. My wife would come in, she'd go, oh, you're listening to that man again, aren't you?
What?
And now she's completely addicted now. She's a big fan of yours. And I'll come home from working away and she'll go, do you know what James said this week? And I'm like, who? James? She'll, yes, James. So you're now a family member now. You've gone from being that man
lovely.
To being a member.
That's right. I'm practically a neighbour as well, of course, having grown up in Kidderminster just down the road. Thank you, Ed. What's your wife's name?
Esther.
Thank you, Esther. That's a lovely thing to hear. Now, question or answer?
Question. Hopefully it's up your street. Mm. Now, big tall buildings, when they're building them, like a shard, they will have like a crane on the top as they're finishing them.
Yeah.
Now, those cranes are counterweighted with tons and tons of concrete. How do they get the cranes down? If they lower them down, then the concrete's still at the top.
Yeah, with other cranes.
So they get another crane to lower that crane down.
So you've got permanent cranes and you've got mobile cranes. And any question about a permanent crane is usually answered by the mobile crane. Seriously, it's one of my all-time favourite subjects, cranes. Cranes and bridges, they make me go weak at the knees.
Yeah, I know, that's what I thought would be a question you might like.
They'll bring in a portable crane to help remove the permanent crane and indeed to remove the concrete.
Right.
And I think it's that simple. I think I'm going to take a round of applause, but I would not be amazed if there's a steward's inquiry, because I'm just an enthusiastic amateur. There will be some professionals listening. Do you know something, actually, Alan, while I've got you?
Yep.
Many years ago, we looked into the possibility of conducting an entire program from up a crane. And we got quite a lot of offers. I'm quite big. It's not just Esther that likes me. I'm quite big in the crane driving community because it keeps you company when you're right. You don't want to listen to music. You want someone who's going to keep you sort of intellectually engaged. So there are quite a lot of LBC in cranes. And we looked into the possibility of doing the entire show from the crane, and the insurance was too expensive. But that was many, many years ago when, you know, people like Esther hadn't realised what a wonderful presenter I am. So now that we've got a much, much bigger audience, I wonder whether I could persuade management to let me do the whole show up a crane. It's going to be worth looking into. You're very welcome. I think that's the answer, and I'm taking the round of applause.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, Alan. You bring in the mobile crane. And you bring down the permanent crane. Don't look at me like that. Cranes are just fascinating. It's one of the ways in which humankind demonstrates its dominion over nature. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Eleanor, well, all right, we'll get someone else to do it then. I'll find a substitute producer to do the show from the top of a massive crane. Actually, I don't want to do it either anymore. Here's one for Mystery Hour. I always used to forget questions for Mystery Hour, but here's one for Mystery Hour. About 15 years ago, I fancied the idea of doing the whole show from up a crane. Now that Eleanor has brought my attention to the fact, the prospect today actually terrifies me. There's no way I'm going up. And it's the same with roller coasters. I used to love a roller coaster. Now, unless I'm at Disney or something like that where you just feel really... I'm terrified. All the things. Potholing. I spent years wanting to go potholing. And then when I finally got the opportunity to go potholing, I was terrified and I said no. Well, why do you... Is it because you are more aware of danger? Yeah, of course it is. That's not a mystery. Dennis is in Plymouth. Dennis, question or answer?
Hello, I've got a question for you, James. Hello.
Carry on, Dennis.
Hello.
Hello.
I've got the grand old age of 70. And
well
I've
done.
Never yet been able to draw the distinction between a pole and a post.
A pole example, and a post?
Pole and a post. For example, you've got a lamppost,
yeah.
called a lamppost, and
yeah.
a signpost is a signpost. But why is a telegraph pole, and a flagpole? Why aren't they flagposts or flag, you know?
This is a brilliant question.
What's the difference? What designates one or the other?
It's an absolutely superb question. Isn't it? What is the difference between a pole and a post?
Why wouldn't you have a telegraph post? Why wouldn't you have a lamp pole?
Or a signpole?
A signpole, exactly.
I mean, what if there is no difference? What if it is just random?
Why the distinction? Why the distinction?
Random.
Yeah, could be, I suppose, but it wouldn't be. There must be somewhere down the line someone decided that...
That's a post and that's a pole. That's a pole and that's
yeah,
a post.
Exactly.
That's not a post, that's a pole, and that's not a pole, that's a post.
Exactly.
Do you have any favourite poles or posts?
Well, you see, I quite like the idea of a lamp pole.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you know the... Have you got any old-fashioned lampposts near you?
No, but when I grew up in a little village, we had two lampposts, and they were gas lampposts.
Still?
We had two down our street.
Wow.
And they changed them from two gas ones to about 20 electric ones. Which you used to think, well, why?
So we've still got them near us. They're not gas, wow, obviously, but they adapted yeah. them. And if you ever yeah. see, I want you to... I've done this on the show before, but I find this stuff really interesting. I want you to picture a lamppost, an old-fashioned yeah. one, right?
Yeah.
So you've got the lantern bit, the glass bit, right?
Yeah,
you've got that
yeah.
in your mind. Now, just below that, there is a horizontal bar, isn't there?
That's right.
Yeah. Do you know what that's for?
Exactly. It's where you rest your ladder.
Yay! Get in! Come on!
Yeah,
well played, Dennis. Beautiful. And, of course, on the ones near me, which are now electric... Yeah. The yeah. bar is still there, so it's a lovely mystery that you and I have solved for millions.
There you go.
Well played, Dennis. What's
actually,
the difference?
In saying that,
yeah,
in saying that
yeah?
I've just come back from a lovely trip to a place called Hondarribia in Spain.
Very nice.
Which is a lovely old town. And they've got all their street lighting is in the shape of the old gas lamps, but with a very subdued lighting. So it just gives the same effect.
Oh, how
gas
delightful.
It's beautiful.
How delightful.
It's really delightful.
That does
yeah.
sound lovely. Oh, well, welcome back.
Thank you.
And we'll try and get you an answer. What's the difference between a pole and a post? 26 minutes after 12 is the time. Jim's in Westminster. Jim, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, Jim.
It's to the crane question.
Cranes.
Yes.
Go on.
So, you did answer it partly, but...
Phew.
So, if the crane is really tall, then it takes itself down using a jacking system, because mobile cranes can't reach the top.
Got it. So, I mean, it is like, what, pistons, is it? Like pneumatics?
Yes, so basically it's a climbing frame that wraps around the tower, so it jacks the top of the crane up, which is a slewing and cab, etc., and then takes the tower section out, drops it down, it lowers it down to a reasonable height for a mobile crane to reach.
So I mean, it is just magnificent, and an embellishment, an improvement on my answer rather than a challenge to it.
But there you go.
So you still get a round of applause. Go, hang on, get qualifications, please.
I am a tower crane operator.
Oh, man alive.
I thought it might get the juices going.
It's got the juices going, Jim. Two paths diverged in a wooden eye. I
there
took the one less travelled by. It could have been me, that. That could have been me in a different universe. All day. All day.
There's still time, mate.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Have a round of applause, Jim, and stay safe. Are you up there now?
I'm up here right now. I'm just about to climb down because it's too windy.
Is it getting too windy today? What do you do then on it when it's too windy to be up the coast? Well, do they find something else for you to do, or do you just read the paper?
I side hustle, so I'll get my laptop out and do that sort of stuff.
Love it. Love it, love it. Yeah. Well, stay safe and don't let me keep you. Seriously, you better get down that ladder sharpish. 28 minutes after 12 is the time. Stephen's in Belfast. Stephen, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Stephen. Hey, while I've got you, why are there no Aldis in Northern Ireland?
I have no idea.
Oh, well, carry on.
I'm going to answer the barnacle question, I hope.
Oh, good man.
So barnacles are microscopic initially, and they're as immature creatures.
Yeah.
So you can't see them. They're floating around in the water like plankton.
Yeah.
And they just end up attaching themselves. That's their life cycle, where they attach themselves to
anything.
Objects.
To a whale, yeah. To an oil rig, to the bottom of a boat.
If you walk along a beach, you'll see them attached onto any rock area.
You will.
Actually, mussels are the same, would you believe? They're microscopic initially as well.
Is that right? Well, of course, plankton grows up.
Yes, Now, I'm not going to say that the plankton's, that's a different creature, but sure. Definitely they start out as microscopic creatures, and they attach themselves to things. And once they're attached, barnacles have like a little feathery thing that comes up and feeds in the water, so that they're just...
So they don't need any energy. They don't need to expend any energy moving around, or they just wait for... Yeah. So a whale is as good as a boat. Is as good as a rock.
The whale's just a platform to sit on. That's all it is.
Qualifications?
I worked in a power station where we used seawater as coolant.
Oh, yeah.
And we injected chemicals to the seawater to kill off the microscopic wildlife, including barnacles.
Why did you have to kill off the microscopic wildlife?
Because they would attach themselves in the internal systems of the power station.
Oh, God, so of course you wouldn't want barnacles inside your turbines or whatever you call them.
Yeah. Well, they would end up in a thing called the condenser where we cooled steam.
And they would just
block off the coolant flow, and eventually you would lose efficiency and all sorts.
Absolutely perfect answer. Round of applause for Stephen.
Thank you very much indeed.
Do you know where you won't be going later?
Where?
Aldi.
No, definitely not.
Amelia Cox has your headlines.
The price of oil is back to close to $100 a barrel after attacks on three more cargo ships in the Gulf. Yesterday, 32 countries, including the UK, agreed to release emergency oil reserves in response to the crisis in the Middle East. LBC has learned that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer. Security services are understood to be monitoring the situation. And a minister has argued the payout to Peter Mandelson after he was sacked as ambassador to Washington was value for money. Documents reveal he received £75,000 from the government. LBC weather, windy with heavy blustery rain spreading southeastwards, drier but dull in southern England, a high of 14 degrees.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
My name is Beverly and this is my NHS story. I had to make regular journeys to my local CDC for blood tests because I had lymphoma. I think it really helps to know that you've got somewhere local. It was really a godsend.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
This week at Lidl, you can afford to be mum's favourite. Treat her with a gorgeous Mother's Day bouquet from £1.89. And show your love with a bottle of Alini Prosecco Spumante, only £4.69 with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus excludes Scotland, while stocks last. Offer ends 18th of March. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It is 33 minutes after 12. Why does, when you change shampoo, why does your hair go squeaky? Why aren't there any Aldis in Northern Ireland? If you're tuning in for coverage of the situation in the Middle East and other current affairs related issues, then do not adjust your radio. This is just a weekly feature that we do that is very frivolous and often foolish, but always fun. Normal service will be resumed at 1 o'clock when Sheila Fogarty gets here. We've answered the barnacles question and we've answered the crane question. Jim, do you know when Jim said, I bet that's got your juices flowing, talking about cranes, I immediately remembered that I've forgotten to drink my homemade juice this morning. It's funny how the human brain works, isn't it? Dawn's in Glasgow. Dawn, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Dawn.
Can somebody tell me why the letters of the alphabet came to be shaped the way that they are? For example, why is an A like an A and a B like a B? Why not, do you know the answer?
No, I'm just wondering why a C is like a C.
Well, yes, that too, because some people are just like that. Why isn't an X an E?
I don't know that I fully understand the question.
Okay, like a letter B is a line straight down with a semicircle at the bottom.
Yeah, I knew that.
Why?
I mean, we need to be specific. Hang on a minute. You just described a D.
Well, yes. I didn't give the orientation of the semicircle, did I?
But what is the? I try to imagine the other play, the parallel universe in which a D was not a D. I mean. You mean?
Yes, exactly.
I knew you were going to do that. I still don't understand the question. So, when were letters invented?
Why are they shaped the way they are?
But why not?
Who first? Sorry?
Why not? Why shouldn't they be?
No, but I want to know why they ended up the shapes they are. Why is an A always has been? Well, apart from F and S and like Shakespeare days. Yeah. Which used to be like an F with an S.
So we're talking about the invention of the written word, really, aren't we? When we started writing things down, why did we choose the shapes that we chose?
Why and who did it? Is that not a reasonable question?
You're only allowed one question.
Well, that is one.
No, it's two. You said why and who did it.
Right, okay. Why is the one I want to answer, please?
But now I want to know who did it, Dawn.
That's your question, James.
Oh, yeah. Why are letters shaped like they are shaped?
Yes. Why did A become the shape that it is, a circle with a straight line down on the right-hand side?
It still could be a Q. Hang on a minute.
No, there wasn't the upturned bit at the bottom of the line.
Fair enough. Well, there is on some A's, actually. there is not that funny.
No, I was talking about a Q.
Okay. And Jordan has just pointed out that the more I mock a question, the more likely it is that we get a truly astonishing answer and the question turns out to be genius. But on this occasion, Dawn, I think I'm going to back myself on this one. So why are letters shaped like they are shaped, like letters are shaped?
Yes.
And who did it? Okay. You're
well,
on.
Just right. The one I'd be happy with.
Yeah, no, well, me too. Thank you, Dawn.
Okay, thank you.
Speak to you soon. Have a lovely day. 12:37 is the time. Annie's in Appleshaw. That's a rather delightful juxtaposition of name and locale. Question or answer, Annie?
It's a question, please.
Carry on.
My family are very musical.
Oh, yes.
My daughter plays the bagpipes, my son plays the tuba, my husband plays the Swanee whistle. Why is it so funny?
He can get tablets for that, can't he? Just for people who don't know, just remind us what a Swanee whistle sounds like.
Okay, 1 second. Did you get that?
I kind of did. So it's the one that go. I mean, it's often used as like the clangers. Were the clangers penny whistles?
Yes, they are. So if I come down the stairs really loudly, he'll play it towards my sound. If I bend over or something, he'll play the Swanee whistle at me. But he finds it hysterical. The family does.
It is very funny.
Why is it funny?
Why is the Swanee whistle funny? That, I mean, to be fair. Between you and Dawn, we've got two questions here that I suspect are going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to answer. But I feel our lives have been enriched for the asking of them. Don't you? Well, I just need a better example. Well, Keith, can you get me a penny whistle? It's not okay. I don't think Annie's got the setup there in the because you need to put the phone
the cottage.
Down to play in the cottage. You need to be at the cottage. Of course, it's a cottage. You live in Appleshaw. It's not going to be a high-rise block of flats, is it, in blooming Appleshaw? It sounds so rustic and bucolic. If it wasn't a cottage, you'd be entitled to a full refund. So we need to, for people who don't know, it sounded like, Bob's been a bit unkind, he said it sounded like you were playing a bicycle pump. Is there any facility to playing the penny whistle? I mean, is your husband good at it, or does everybody have the same relationship with the penny whistle?
No, I think it was because my kids and I play musical instruments in local town bands, and
cool
he
band.
Can't play an instrument.
So he bought himself a penny whistle.
Yeah, to make up for it.
It's up there with the kazoo, really, for skills required, isn't it?
It is. But it is very funny.
It's the one with the plunger, the whistle with the plunger. Here it
That's
is.
It.
Okay, just you're the expert. Just double check that Keith's opened the right cupboard, will you? Are we ready for this? Here we go. No, we're not ready for this. Are we ready for this? This is why we win all the big awards. Okay, here we go. Nearly ready? No. Yeah.
<That's
the
one.
laughs> Yeah, that one. Stop it, Keith. That one, yeah?
Yeah.
That's the one. Okay, why is that funny? Swanee.
Hello.
But you're on. Okay, stop it now. Seriously,
Thank
I'm trying
you.
To present a radio program. Annie, take care. What do you play in the town band again?
I play the clarinet. My daughter has the bagpipes and my son plays the tuba.
Good Lord, your poor neighbours.
Yeah, sure.
Bagpipes, clarinet and tuba all in the same band.
Yeah, and my husband does have a banjo, but he doesn't pick it up. It's still on the stand for 2 years.
Yeah, okay. That's because he's so busy with his Swanee whistle. 12:41 is the time. Whoa, stop it, seriously. Richie's in Colchester. Richie, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
Last night, my daughter, we were sitting in the living room watching telly, and she stood up and she put her coat on.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you're going to see your boyfriend? She said, no, why? And I said, well, because you put your coat on. She said, it's not a coat, it's a jacket.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, okay, what's the difference between a coat and a jacket? I know a man who'll know the answer to that.
I don't, I mean, it's just length, isn't it?
I don't know, that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, a jacket stops at the waist and a coat goes below the waist.
I mean, she's of that age, she's 18, I kind of think if I'd have said, why have you put your jacket on, she would have said, it's not a jacket,
it's a coat. I sensed that from your impression, your impersonation of her. I sense that tensions are running high at home at the moment. And I sense that you can't do anything right, Richie, can you?
You are absolutely correct.
For love or money. For love or money. We've all been there, both as teenagers and as parents, don't forget. So, you know, we don't get to sit too high up on our high horses. But, yeah, I mean, if I were to go back to my days in menswear, when the very simple distinction between the coat department and the jacket department would be that the coat went below the waist. So it can go knee length, ankle length, mid length, and the jacket stops at the waist. So if you cup your hat, here you go, I'll stand up and I'll show you, because you can do this. You cup your hands And you can, if you cup your hands over the bottom of the garment, it's a jacket.
Right.
Yeah?
Okay, all right, James, I'm going to
qualifications? Qualifications?
You gave me the answer.
I'm asking myself. Or I'm queuing you up to ask me, in fact.
Oh, sorry, and James, qualifications?
Well, 5 years working in Aquascutum of Regent Street, and before that, 6 months working at River Island on Worcester High Street, so menswear in my
bones.
Round
of applause for James.
Thank you very much. Well played, Richie. And just to sort of cheer you up a bit, a friend of mine tells a story about his daughter, who, it's not unlike the Kevin and Perry scenario on the Harry Enfield show, but she went upstairs when she was about 14, and came down as a right old Mardy bum. And then she went upstairs again when she was about 19 and came down and she transformed into an utterly charming and delightful young lady. So you're probably near the end of the tunnel now.
7 months.
So you're 7 months away, mate. Hang in there, seriously. It is 12:43, 0345. Quick answers. The Swanee Whistle. I've done the coat and jacket. Dawn's question about letters. Why is a Swanee Whistle funny? Why are letters shaped like they are? What's the difference between a pole and a post? Why aren't there any Aldis in Northern Ireland? And why does your hair go squeaky when you change shampoo? Surrey is in Hadleywood. Surrey, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Surrey.
It's a question, please.
Carry on.
So why do mirrors give differing reflections? So let me give you an example. I'll put on an outfit at home, try it on, and it looks great. I look really slim. Yeah. And then I'll go to Marks and Spencer's, try some clothes on there, and I look bigger in the mirrors there.
Really? I thought it was going to be the other way around, actually, when you start. No, I did.
No, I look bigger. Yes, you're right, it should be the other way around. But, you know, different mirrors give... you know, differing reflections. In some, I look slimmer. Some, I look a little bit bigger.
I mean, there are two answers to this question. One is physical. One's mental. So the physical bit is that there will be differences in tint, there'll be differences in thickness of the glass, things could be affected by how regularly it's cleaned, there'll be all sorts of, like, tiny, tiny little potential distortions that would, and how the light, how the room is lit, all sorts of things that might affect it. But I think the other one is psychological, and that is your mirror. At home, so that's the one that you're most used to, and so your brain is being kind to you when you look in the familiar mirror. It knows, because there's no way a shop would deliberately have a mirror that's less flattering. They're more likely to have the tinted mirror or the mirror that like elongates you ever so slightly or makes you a tiny bit taller. I think, and I've got no idea where this comes from, frankly, so there's no earthly way I'm getting a round of applause, but I think that you're comfortable at home when you try on your clothes, so it's almost as if that comfortable is being reflected back at you.
Is it not anything to do with the quality of the mirror? So the quality of the glass and the...
I mean, it could be, but you'd think Marks and Sparks would spring for some decent mirrors, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
With all their money. But that would fit into answer number one, the sort of physical variables, the thickness of the mirror, the quality of the glass, the lighting in the room. I mean, it's quite unforgiving lighting in big shops quite often, whereas at home, I presume, in your boudoir, sorry, I presume you've got quite subdued lighting.
No, good. Natural daylight.
Well, even better. Even better, through, you see. Even better. Yeah. Probably, I mean, have you tried closing the curtains?
No. No. I haven't looked in the dark, actually.
No.
I
put it on the board. Why do we look different in different mirrors? But the specific question of why the one in your bedroom is the most flattering, I think is going to be more psychological than physical. But as I say, I've got absolutely zero qualifications for this, but I like to think I sound very confident.
we'll hold back on the round of applause for now.
We certainly will, sorry. Thank you very much indeed. So we got the mirrors, the Swanee Whistles, the letters, the poles and the posts, the Aldis and the shampoo.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Iran's missile options are reduced, but what they do in one of the busiest shipping channels in the world is a powerful weapon. What can it mean for us? And can Parliament help young people afford life?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC.
had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Aye, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
12:49 is the time. A British man has been arrested after allegedly filming missiles targeting Dubai. He's one of 22 people charged under United Arab Emirates cybercrime laws. Obviously, he's a 60-year-old tourist, and obviously you send nothing but good wishes to people who find themselves caught up in that situation. But I hope it will give the various ghouls and freaks who live in relative taxile in places like Dubai while posting utter lies about the safety and security of London pause for thought. It turns out you really can get locked up over there for social media posts, which involve not calling for people to be burnt to death alive in their hotel beds, but simply sticking your phone out the window and taking a picture. It would appear. More on that, no doubt, tomorrow, or indeed later on LBC, because nothing interferes with Mystery Hour, well, except the things that do. David is in Cardiff. David, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so it's to do with the shape of letters.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. Mm. Well, all writing systems in the world, they people were drawing before they were writing, yeah?
Yeah.
And so all of the writing systems began with ideograms, yeah? So, for example, the letter A, yeah? Which is the only example I can give you, because...
Yeah, A.
So it's based on an Egyptian hieroglyph. Yes, it is, yeah. The hieroglyph was originally a symbol for a cow or a bull. So if you imagine, it's difficult to do without down a phone line, but if you imagine an upside-down semicircle, right, and then underneath it a smaller semicircle, so you've got horns, which is the larger, and the face would be underneath.
Yeah,
this was a hieroglyph for a cow or a bull.
Right.
Now, what happened then, it wasn't called bull, obviously, it was pronounced our, like A-U-A.
It's
right?
happening. But it's going to be a brilliant answer to a question that we all thought was bonkers.
So, at one point, in the Middle East, the symbol was turned upside down.
I was just thinking that.
And it was used to represent the sound R, so it was a phonic then, right? Thereby becoming, eventually, the Greco-Roman A, the capital A, as we know it in our alphabet. Right?
Do you want the good news or the bad news?
Well, any.
Well, the good news is this is brilliant. The bad news is we've only got 7 minutes left and there's 25 letters to go.
Well, I can't give you any more examples, James. I'm just giving you a roundabout answer to to...
That's beautiful. Dawn will be delighted. I mean, admittedly, we've only done one out of 26 letters in the Arabic alphabet, but that is such a thing of beauty, because anybody who's got a pen with them has just done a kind of semicircle, upside down, a big one and then a little one underneath it, seen the bovine visage, the bovine face there, the horns and the snout or the mouth, and then turned it upside down, and you have the rudiments of the capital A, the letter A. And, you know, in a way, there's 51 other answers, isn't there? Because you'd have the uppercase and the lowercase. But you've given us an indication and an explanation of how it might have happened, how it does happen.
Yeah, well, if you think of all of the systems in China, Korea, Vietnam, Japan. In Japan, it's based on a Chinese system. It's called kanji, right, in Japan. Mm. These are all, were all originally drawings of things or symbols or objects from nature.
Which is why they've all evolved differently. We've got different languages in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
What are your qualifications, David?
My qualifications are, well, I was a secondary school teacher, design and technology teacher for 36 long years. James, I'm retired now. Mm. And I'm also a teacher of Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art.
Oh.
Right, okay. The reason I know this is because I have in front of me, actually, an Aikido Today magazine from July and August in 1998. I keep a lot of junk, James. And I read about this a long time ago, and I thought, how useful. Because, of course, I was teaching kids to do graphic things, right?
Yeah.
And everyone in school, there was a big trend, but, oh, literacy, everybody has to be a teacher of literacy.
Yeah.
And, of course, I had an observation one day from someone who was a deputy head and also an English teacher, formerly a head of English.
Mm.
And I put my whole pitch to this Year 7 group around the origin of this and the fact that people were drawing before they were writing, because that's
incredible.
How people communicated.
Of course, well, it is. I love it. I made a mistake a minute ago when I said Arabic. It's the numerals that are Arabic. It's not the letters. So my apologies for that. Nothing to do with you, David. That is a thing of beauty. So Dawn's going to be delighted, isn't she? It's now we know where the letter A, why the letter A is the letter A.
Yes, indeed.
Round of applause for David.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, David. Hang on, Aikido.
Yes.
What's that one about? What's different? Oh. What distinguishes Aikido from other martial arts?
Okay, well, Aikido is derived from Daito Ryu Jiu-Jitsu. It's a fairly modern thing. It translates roughly as the way of harmony.
Okay.
So it's to do with resolving conflict as opposed to fighting per se. You see
I
what
like
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, of course I do. I've got a story that I haven't shared on the radio. I'm pretty sure I haven't shared it on the radio, have I? And it involves Tai Chi.
Oh, great.
No, it's not great. I'm not ready to share it yet. I'm not, but you stay tuned, David. One day I'll tell my Tai Chi story.
Okay, look forward to it.
No, it'll be worth the wait, seriously. Eleanor knows this story. I'm not ready to share it yet. It's a bad story. It's a bad, bad story. Marcus is in Cheltenham. Marcus, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
A post and a pole. A post is 10 to 15 feet, and a pole is above 20 foot long.
What's the bit between 15 and 20, then?
Not a clue.
This is absolute rubbish.
It's not.
Of course it is. A pole and a post, a flagpole and a lamp post could be exactly the same height.
I don't know.
They could be.
Because a lamp post, they used to be a lot shorter.
Yeah, but they're not now. So
no,
what are your qualifications?
Telehandler driver.
A what handler driver? A mobile crane? A mobile crane driver? Oh, this is getting ridiculous, this show. Absolutely vintage. All right, so where did you get this information from, that a pole is maximum 15 feet and a post is maximum 15 feet and a pole is above 20 feet?
Because I don't know. It's just on the paperwork when you get them in.
Is it really?
Yeah.
But then what on earth is a thing that is 17 feet?
Oh, no one knows that one.
You see, this is where I think you're yanking my chain. I'm going to give you a round of applause for being a good sport. But there's no way this is the correct... Well, maybe it is the correct answer, and it's just in the mid... So what else have we got? Flagpole, lamppost, telegraph pole,
Telegraph poles, yeah, because a pole only goes up to 15.
That's not true. It's not true at all. It can't be true. Post, goalpost. Ah, goalpost.
Yeah.
Right, it's only about 8 feet.
Yeah.
Ha! What's get out of here.
Yeah, but what's buried in the ground?
Thank you, Barry. Hey! What? Eight bits of you. Yeah, right, off you go. Nice try, mate. You didn't get that one past me. I just nicked it and saved it in the nick of time. John's in Belfast. John, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's an answer to why there are no Aldis in Northern Ireland.
I'd have been very, very upset if it wasn't.
Yeah, okay. So three main reasons. One are alcohol licensing laws in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
We operate a surrender license policy, which means you can't open a new supermarket without a license for to sell alcohol. And
right.
To get that license, you need to get one that already exists. So
oh.
you could not get a critical mass overnight because there aren't that many licenses. The second bit is if you identify a good area, it's already land banked by the existing supermarket.
So they've been like Tesco have got in there and, yep. and sewn it all up.
So that's it. And then the final bit is Brexit. So the existing people who are here have found a way around Brexit.
Yeah.
Whereas Aldi look at it, I suspect, and go,
not worth it.
Can't be bothered.
Not that's worth it. The effort. Qualifications?
I've just retired from the industry after 38 years.
Oh, I'm flipping out. What a beautiful answer. Carry on. Enjoying retirement, John?
Loving it, James. Absolutely loving it.
That's what we like to hear. Good man. Ball game to Dawn, I think. Don't you? The letters lady. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion this week. That man alive. I wonder whether the more serious the news is, the more mad and frivolous Mystery Hour becomes, and therefore the more fun we all have. I hope so, but that was, for me, one...
I'm all for it.
It's one for the
I'm
ages.
All for it.
It's one for the ages. So it is.
I had the beginning of this programme.
Yes.
I prefer the end.
Yeah, well, tell me about it. Tell me about it. If you missed any of it, though, of course, you can listen back on our free Global Player app, where you can rewind and pause live radio. You can also listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. So do download the official LBC app. It's all free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it is Tom Swarbrick, but now it is time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. At 3 today, as a committee of MPs launches its inquiry into student loans, I'm wondering, can politics really help young people to afford life? They're going to have to get stuck in if it's going to. At 2, Reform leader Nigel Farage says Iran is a bigger problem than Russia is for us. We'll test that particular theory. We start, though, with Iran. Iran's missile options are reduced, of course, but what they do in one of the busiest shipping channels in the world, the Strait of Hormuz, is a very powerful weapon indeed. What might it be and what could it mean for us? We'll also have an update on the sentencing of a woman whose crimes feel straight out of a horror film, and we'll touch base with some UK people in Dubai as well. That's all coming up.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The price of oil is back to close to $100 a barrel following attacks on 3 more cargo ships in the Gulf. Yesterday, Iran warned the cost could reach $200 as it continues to block the Strait of Hormuz. Vandana Hari is founder and CEO of Vanda Insights, which analyses activity in the global energy markets. She says the US and Israel will have to act.
I wouldn't expect it to go to 200 just yet, but of course that it all depends on how long the strait remains shut. I have a feeling there will be some very radical measures coming out of the US and Israel. It's hard to say what, but they will have to stop this one way or another way before crude reaches even $150, let alone $200 a barrel.
A 56-year-old woman has been sentenced to 13 years in prison for keeping a woman in her house as a slave for 25 years. Gloucester Crown Court heard how the victim, who can't be named, still suffers from trauma and nightmares. The woman, who is now in her mid-40s, was 16 when she moved into Amanda Wixon's home in 1995. It's emerged ISIS is encouraging its followers to target this summer's World Cup in the US, Canada and Mexico. LBC has learnt the terror group has named the tournament as a priority target. Neil Basu is the UK's former head of counter-terror policing.
It's straight out of the ISIS playbook. So they used to have, and I believe they still do, have a monthly magazine which effectively talks about methodology, who you should attack, how you should attack them, tips and tricks for doing that. If any of our listeners want to download that, good luck, because my colleagues will be coming around to see you if you do. It's illegal to possess and use.
It's understood security services are monitoring the situation closely. You can read more on our exclusive story on the LBC app. A 17-year-old girl has been shot in the legs in what police in Liverpool are describing as a targeted attack. The teenager was found injured in the Toxteth area in the early hours of this morning. No arrests have been made. And the Halifax Bank has apologised after customers complained they were seeing other people's transactions in their app. Lloyds and Bank of Scotland have also been affected and are blaming a technical glitch. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 39 points at 10,313. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with heavy blustery rain spreading southeastwards, drier but dull in southern England, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This week at Lidl, you can afford to be mum's favourite. Treat her with a gorgeous Mother's Day bouquet from £1.89 and show your love with a bottle of Alini Prosecco Spumante, only £4.69 with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus excludes Scotland, while stocks last. Offer ends 18th of March. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you. Well, it was said fairly early on in this war on Iran and in the wider Middle East that the Strait of Hormuz would prove to be absolutely critical, both to Iran, because it can use it as a kind of a weapon, but also in terms of whether the rest of the world is able to continue to use it. It's not looking good at the moment. More cargo ships have been attacked in the Gulf, apparently by Iran, as the oil prices have risen again to almost $100 a barrel. Two tankers were hit near Iraq. A container ship was struck near the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. Iranian state media says Iranian forces were indeed behind at least one of those strikes. In Iran, US-Israeli strikes on Tehran itself have targeted street checkpoints. A volunteer militia called the Bazij, I think it's called. They've targeted their street checks. The US and Israel want to create the conditions for Iranians to take to the streets, but that is far from a simple proposition, as I'm sure you're aware. So what are the implications for us, to bring it down to brass tacks in our lives as well? Obviously, there's the whole wider issue of the safety of people in the Middle East. But this is a war that's already having an impact on how some businesses operate. You look at the speed with which heating oil dramatically increased in price as soon as that war started. You were telling me about it earlier in the week. Let's talk to two people who know a fair bit about this and are involved in the business of oil and assessing what's going on in that region. I'm joined by Ivan Jimenez, president of the Port of Bilbao, and Chris Bernkopf, energy expert and co-founder and CEO of energy management platform Podero. Good afternoon to both of you.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Ivan Jimenez, first of all, what are you looking at most urgently in all of this?
Well, this problem will take us to a different situation from the previous one when it comes to the route deviation. Things were going back to another situation where the Suez Canal was already being used. Something that didn't happen in the past years, but we see now that with this situation again, most of the routes will choose the Cape of Good Hope. It means basically that they are going to spend more money. The duration of the routes will be increased by 10 to 15 days. So basically, more codes, more risk insurance. I mean, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So at the end, will be inflation for everyone.
And yeah, those costs of those 10 extra days, 10 extra days of staffing, the length of the journey, as you describe, insurance, all filters down eventually to the market, doesn't it? And Chris Bernkopf, if I can bring you in on this, let's talk at the same time, really, together. What's your, what's the most urgent thing you're looking at, or the most key thing in your view?
Absolutely. So we see in the last 2 weeks since the conflict started that oil and gas prices have already risen dramatically. You spoke before about $100 per barrel. And you're seeing that 20% of the world's oil and gas travels through the Strait of Hormuz. And with the effective closure by attacking ships, we've now seen the prices rise. And this has several problems. You can notice it at the petrol stations already. You can notice it in the price of heating oil. But of course, this also translates to the electricity prices. So gas sets the price for electricity. So that means when gas prices rise dramatically, that of course this also increases electricity prices. The good thing is UK consumers are protected until end of June with the price caps. And of course from July onwards, you would notice as a consumer potentially. As a business, of course, if you're in the chemical industry, you notice things like rising gas prices very fast as well.
Well, the problem for our consumers in the UK is that if they rely heavily or totally on a heating oil for their hot water and their heating, it's not covered by the same protections as the utility companies are. So that's why so quickly so many were ringing the program to say that their prices had sometimes more than doubled in the space of a week. So, you know, some people are feeling that impact very early on, aren't they? And Chris, can I ask you how long you think it will go on for and how that affects? I mean, that's a very difficult thing to predict, I'm aware, but is there a critical point at which things will really start to dramatically shift in terms of how shipping operates? Ivan was just describing already some changes to that, how shipping operates when it becomes a real critical mass of events.
Yeah, it's a great question. Donald Trump mentioned in the early days of the war that this war might be over in a few weeks. At the moment, we're not seeing this happen. We're seeing the opposite happen. We're seeing attacks on both sides on oil and gas infrastructure. We're seeing attacks on ships that are very frequent, as I mentioned today. So at the moment, there's no end in sight. Now, of course, these prices will translate to the consumer in many forms, as I said already, for heating oil. But of course, also the electricity, everything to consumer goods. These prices also mean that we're now competing on the global market with every other economy, especially with the Asian ones for gas, which further drives up the price. And so at the moment, it's not clear when the end will be. But of course, we're not seeing any indication yet.